following is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network, available on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboo, and at swn.shiningwizards.com.
Have you ever been that lonely guy standing in the corner of a bar, lacking the confidence to approach a beautiful woman or even defend yourself if needed? Well, this is the book for you. Bar Jitsu, the American Art of Bar Fighting, filled with tips, techniques, and stories aimed to help you become the barroom stud that you've always wanted to be. Pick up your copy of Bar Jitsu, the American Art of Bar Fighting, online or at a bookstore near you.
Pre-order Bar Jitsu, the American Art of Bar Fighting, now on Amazon through barjutsu.com. That's barjutsu.com. Also find them on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the original Four Horsemen. Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame 2013, WWE Hall of Fame as part of the Four Horsemen 2012, and you're listening to the Shining Wizards.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are here in the Shining Wizards studio for another awesome edition of the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast, where, of course, it's wrestling talk.
And talk about wrestling.
I'm the Undertaker.
I'm the Big Boss Man.
I'm Midian.
I am Viscera.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
And there it is.
Wait, we got one more.
And I'm Kane.
There you go.
There we are. There corporate we Kane.
The corporation, huh?
Oh, God. Corporate
something
Kane.
Something like that, sure.
No one was even our guest tonight, Ken Shamrock.
You want to talk to Ken Shamrock?
No.
Go ahead.
Absolutely,
go
no.
Ahead.
No.
Hey,
no.
Ken Shamrock.
Oh, hey, Andy. How are you doing? It's great to be here.
Awful. We have a couple of special guests in the studio this evening.
Jesus Christ. You are so loud. I got to lower you a little
so
bit.
I am so loud.
Go ahead.
You might have seen us advertise them on the Facebook page. They
you said
nice
Cenas.
Cenas.
multiple Cenas.
Multiple Cenas. They are known as the Xer guys.
Yeah.
Introduce yourself, fellas.
What's up? I'm JP.
And I'm N3.
JP well, and M3.
Welcome. The kings of neon.
Yes.
The leaders of the anti-fat movement.
Anti-fat.
How's that going, by the way?
It's going pretty well.
All right.
What do you guys recommend? I mean, a lot of us have been doing DDP yoga, as you can tell.
We did do it once.
No, I'm back on the wagon, actually. I still have not hit 230 pounds again, so I'm
wagon?
Happy about that.
The hot dog wagon.
No, dude, I was down to a svelte 221 there for a week.
Yeah, it looked like you had AIDS. It was scary, bro.
Why are you saying that?
Yeah, AIDS is a big thing.
Why am I saying that?
AIDS isn't scary.
It looks like you were melting.
I got too close
like
to the
Missy
sun.
You're like Missy Hyatt.
Oh. Oh,
boy.
Wow.
White boy.
You guys ever listen to our podcast?
Oh, here we go already. Just say yes.
Just say no, because every
yeah, it's okay.
Of course,
you
I
want
do.
The truth.
Every guest says no, so it's fine.
Continuing the Mangue tradition.
Except the Sign Girls, they listen.
Yes,
they do.
Well,
they want us
well.
To play Fuck, Marry, Kill with you guys tonight.
Oh, I was thinking about that today at work, and I may have come up with a good threesome.
All
I'm
right.
thinking women. In exercise in wrestling history.
Melissa Coates?
She's a beauty.
Austin?
No. I'm thinking, think along the lines like Sunny, the Body Donnas.
Oh,
but
she's
like,
a pay.
I'm thinking more like... Sunny is a friend of the Shining Wizards, and the Xer guys' opinions.
No, that's fine. This is a platform
but
you
know
for
what?
You to express
no,
your opinion.
She used to be very hot, and then she just took
she's
a nosedive.
Speaking of pig, JP...
Wow.
Yeah, if you see a...
Why, you look like
at the
Cornelius.
Huh?
You look like Yukon Cornelius.
It looks like... I've heard of that before.
Merry it looks Christmas, like he's everyone. Been on a squirrel's ass. Look at that beard.
His beard is beautiful. Majestic, even.
Yeah. I do have beard envy, I'm not gonna lie.
This beard rocks shit socks, all right, brother.
I believe it. I'm a fan of the beards. I'm a beard guy, usually.
My beard sucks. I've been growing it for a year. I literally started growing it during the hurricane last year.
It's still growing.
That's what it is. A bald spot here, a bald spot here. This is, like, light for some reason.
Need a relief fund for you.
I look like Butthead after he glued pubic hair on his face.
I actually just shaved yesterday clean.
That sounds about right.
This is what happened.
Of course,
like
you
Homer
did.
Simpson deal.
I can't get away from it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I can't connect this.
Yeah, me
I don't
either.
Know why.
I have reverse fang syndrome here, where I don't get like tusks coming in.
Yeah, so we're very envious of your
yes
bird's nest
beard
there.
Envy.
Like you
had a
bird's
fucking
nest
beard
thanks.
For like a year, and no one ever says anything nice about my beard.
Because you're an asshole.
What have you ever done to deserve
you know
someone complimenting
you? Know what
you?
Your beard looks like? Like you blew shit rockets out of your nose, and it melted down the sides of your lips. It's like really thick in your nostrils.
What, up here?
Yes.
Because I can't get up there with the shave, the razor, without just making a reverse Hitler. Just fucking it all up.
Just go for the reverse that. Hitler.
Yeah, do the Doc Hendricks.
Like the fucking Mick Mars, like just go here. And,
oh, God. He's still alive, isn't he?
Yeah.
Mick Mars?
Fucking 3,000 years old.
Bendy McBenstraw.
He's like this fucking pole. He can't even move.
They just prop him up against something on the stage. They really do.
Who are we talking about?
Mick Mars.
Oh.
Motley Crue.
Motley Crue.
Man.
Wow.
I ruined that. Totally ruined that conversation.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Way to fucking pull the brake there.
Well, let's bring it back around to the guests of honor.
The Exer guys.
The Exer guys.
Yeah.
What exactly are the Exer guys for the audience out there that does not know?
Well, the Exer guys are a tag team and on the indie scene, and we're pretty much, we know everything about fitness. And we know like fat people, clearly.
No way. No
we
how.
Hate them.
Wow.
We don't even want them in the same room.
I wish we had a camera in here right now
just
videotaping this
with me.
Interview. It would just bring it all more to life. But yes, continue. So, Rage Against Fat People.
Yes, we don't like fat people, and we like neon, 80s neon.
You like that?
Yes. And, yes.
Great touch.
Yeah.
Love it.
And
that's how we roll.
We love, 80s music, Olivia Newton-John.
It's a remix, by the way.
It is a remix. We want to at least try to keep up with the times.
The speed, you know what
and
I'm
saying? Then, but so we hate fat people, and we brought it to the indie scene, and we want to beat up anybody who we think we see fit.
And M3 looks great, pink.
Or you see unfit.
Yes.
Or we see unfit.
Or you
yes.
see unfit. And where do you work? What organizations?
We work. We've done PWS, as you know. We've done WXW with the Samoans. HOA Hardcore, House of Hardcore.
May I interrupt? The Samoans are usually large fat people.
Yeah, we don't
we
like.
We still can't get along with them today.
They didn't want us there at first. But
see, there's a whole lot of hate on the couch. They hate them because they're fat, and Matt hates them because they're dark.
I hate everyone.
That's a white bomb.
Okay.
Uh-oh. Equal opportunity racist. That's Matt.
Look, no, it's not Eeyore. Racism if you hate everyone equally.
Eeyore.
Get it? Matt's
an
Eeyore.
I understand how this gets turned on me.
Hi, everyone.
It always comes back to you.
Dude, you seem like you're the black sheep of this whole crew.
Yes.
Well, black is the operative word.
Typically, I'm the problem.
Dude, I'm just pulling up some of your photos on Facebook. This is fucking hysterical.
Oh, the gimmick is... The gimmick's fantastic.
Oh, I don't know. You're just like your promo, your in-ring stuff, your walking, your poses and shit.
Nice.
It's fantastic.
We flex a lot.
We really, really like the shake weight.
Yeah.
Our opponents don't like it so much, but we love it.
Yep.
Is that the workout equipment of choice, the shake weight?
Yeah, the shake weight. We have our own protein powder.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. That's your guys' protein powder.
Nice.
And also, we just got in, and we're going to debut soon, those 80s, the bendy bars.
Oh, nice. Bring it back.
I'm thinking Rick Rude Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
Great for the delts.
Yeah.
Great for the delts.
Great.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well,
sometimes I put them between my legs and do the Suzanne Summers.
The thigh master.
Yes, yes. But you got to watch, because I had to kick up sometimes.
Oh, man.
Did you see their shirts?
Black and blue for a week.
Did you see their shirts?
Yeah, what are you on? so people can follow
along. It's the Extra Guys Facebook page.
JP's on steroids.
It's just Facebook.
Of course.
I'm assuming Facebook slash.
That's noticeable. Very
Thank
noticeable.
You.
Facebook slash the Extra Guys. And their shirt is... It's a big round person with just like the no smoking thing.
Like that's a hilarious. Ghostbusters for fat
like
people.
That's what it is.
Yep. When you walk into the bathroom,
yes.
Those signs, but it's a fat person.
That's awesome. That's
so now, do they book you guys predominantly against larger larger wrestlers? Or do you guys work?
No, I mean, like, well, when we started with the Samoans, we wrestled BYOB. And that was team of a small fella. And a very large fella. Yeah. So he would get in the ring with the small guy first, throw him around, make it look easy.
Of course.
Then when he tagged in the big guy, that was my chance to shine.
Okay.
They had numerous beard offs.
Yeah, beard. He had a beard. I had a beard. It was terrible.
And then you'd shit the bed.
And then it goes downhill from there.
Then it just goes downhill from
there. Old gravy leg.
So did you guys meet at a gym? Is that how you guys got together at like a Gold's? In Sarasota.
Well, M3 was admiring my physique one day in the mirror of the gym.
Oh.
and he wanted workout tips. So figured I'd, you know, bring him along, bring him under my wing, and you know, we both
it's
had paying a
off.
Common hatred of fat people. So
you know,
anybody
I
who doesn't like fat people, they're a friend of mine. Let me tell you.
It says no fatties on the back of their shirt.
Now, by having a hatred towards fat people, doesn't that really slim down, no pun intended, your fan base, considering these are wrestling fans?
Yeah, but that's the best part. It's like 75 to 90% of the audience that we always work in front of are fat, toothless bastards.
Yeah. They love to yell and scream at us. You know, I wish I could punch their teeth out, but they don't fucking have any. So it's impossible.
Their teeth look like stalactites. Mice. Did you ever see the stalactites in the caves?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Wow. Wow. So I take it you guys aren't the fan favorites.
Well, I think they enjoy hating on us.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, sometimes. Sometimes they like us, but mostly we have a handful of people each show up in our face wanting to swing and throw stuff at us.
They claim they know our sexual orientation.
Yeah, I know.
They start yelling.
And yet not one of them asks you for workout tips or dietary advice. I don't understand.
I mean, we're the gurus of fitness.
And you guys are nice enough to bring energy bars.
Energy bars.
Yeah.
And protein shakes.
Yes.
Gave out VIP passes to the gym one time. Wow. But you know what? That flopped on us.
Yeah,
they didn't appreciate it.
It flopped like their fat bellies.
I was being nice. They took it as an insult.
We tried,
See, I would have been upset.
These wrestling fans are so sensitive.
I know.
Way too sensitive.
And, like, their guts hang over their belts. It's like they're trying to hide something.
Matt's sucking in.
Everyone just took a deep breath.
Yeah,
we're very uncomfortable right now in front of these works of art, as you will.
I'm comfortable. I got half a stack.
In your hand and your pants.
Yeah, you are.
Wow. Both, probably.
It's a roll of quarters and a sock.
So what do you guys do to maintain these wonderful physiques?
They go to the gym, Matt.
Yes, but not all about the gym, Kevin.
Kevin Garifo, ladies and gentlemen.
90% of it is what you put in your body.
Fair enough.
True. Like cookies?
Like Tony puts dicks in his ass. So
that's a lot of protein, I heard.
That's a lot of protein.
No, it's not the dick that's the protein. It's the cum that he gargles when he's
really?
Done.
But that's why he has perfect posture.
And pearly white teeth.
Oh, now it's my turn?
Yeah, so back to the question. What do you
like bleach?
What do you gentlemen do besides hit up the gym and embarrass everyone else there?
Well, I play a lot of badminton on the weekend.
Nice.
All right. Badminton's Sundays. Awesome.
Yeah. After church, I'm a very religious guy.
Do a lot of fat people go to church?
Yes.
Yes, a lot.
Especially the preachers.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Usually.
They don't care.
I mean, like, you know.
The priests, for the most part, are in good shape.
Yeah. Preachers are always bent over, usually.
Yeah. Stretching off.
Usually.
No, purely just stretching.
Just, yeah.
Touch
usually
your toes.
Bent over.
Touching your toes for Jesus.
Touching your toes for Jesus.
Just count to 30. It'll be all over with.
Now, I first saw you guys in Pro Wrestling Syndicate. Have you worked Battle Royals with them?
Yes.
Have you had any predominant, like, any tag matches?
We worked the Edison show.
Okay.
And we worked, it was us and King Hippo.
Oh, yeah.
This is, right. Oh, so this is recent then. This is
This is only about a month or so ago.
Okay.
This was actually the day after they returned to Rawley.
Right. Gotcha.
We did the battle royal there.
Yeah.
Then the next day we went to Edison and did a six-man. Us, Ing Hippo, versus Drunken Swashbuckler.
And two.
Who else? Two of their new guys, their students.
Oh, was it Black Hollywood?
No.
Suburban
Outfitters? No, we remember them.
Yes.
They stole my wallet once. I'll never forget that.
Oh, here we go.
You know, mine's missing too.
Wasn't me.
Yeah, Pro Wrestling Syndicate, that's an awesome organization.
Yes, they are awesome.
That's a lot of exposure.
Yeah.
They're really, really, really fun to work with.
You guys train with them, or?
No. I came from the Wild Samoan Training Center.
Afa. Out in Allentown, right?
Well, Afa, and then Samu took over.
Samu.
Afa went south.
Oh, where's Afa now?
He's down in Florida.
Okay.
Mineola, Florida he runs.
Yeah, I read that he was backstage at a Raw in Florida.
Orlando,
So Samu is?
Samu took over in like 2008, I believe.
Okay, now that's Lance's father, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay, and is that your hookup to PWS through Lance?
No. I've actually known Eric Tabb.
I know
years.
His hookup. Wait, let me tell the story.
Oh God!
The extra guys wanted to check out if the strippers were fit down at Taboo, and they saw what a mess that Craig Steele is. So they got some free dances for some exercise tips.
Wow, that's your version.
Sorry, Craig.
That's your version.
Under the bus, my friend.
It was a whole bunch of fupas.
I want to hear Redbeard's version though.
Arr.
What was it now? Train of thought.
We had the opportunity in PWS.
Yes.
Oh, PWS. I've known Tap Out for years, ever since like 2007.
Oh, okay.
So I've known him. And yeah, the Drunken Swashbuckler.
Yeah.
Him.
I like how you say that.
TDS.
Drunken Swashbuckler.
Butler.
Because he's drunk. And,
yeah. And I've known them for a while, so I've been humming around here and there. And then we started doing the seminars, too, last year when they started doing those.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, what are the seminars like? Like, who hosts those?
All right, we did the Matt Hardy one.
Okay.
It was fun. Yeah! Right when they first... open up their school, so all their students were brand new.
Right.
So like Destruction and
Gibbs,
Damien, and all them were all brand new to them.
Did he teach you how to chop a tomato?
No.
I can chop a tomato.
God,
that was pretty.
You
usually
have my mom do that. That's stupid shit.
Do you boys still live at home?
I live with two roommates. They're lovely people.
Oh yes.
Yes.
Would we know who they are?
No.
Okay. And you, sir?
I as well have two roommates.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So who do you guys live with?
Wow. You don't know where this is going?
A lovely
couple. Am I the only one that sees this?
No, I don't see where this is going.
I don't know what you're talking about, guys.
Yeah.
Listen, you're two guys in great shape. What are you? Shut up.
Oh, I see where you go with this. Listen. Yeah, listen, if I went down that street, at least I can do better than that.
Oh.
Really?
Wow. Who are you pointing at?
Wow.
No one can see you.
This got off the tracks.
Wow.
He's Stevie Richard voice with John Cena face. How could you go wrong?
Oh, don't even go there.
Wow.
I'm sorry, bro.
Oof. Don't even go there.
M3 hates me.
I guess we have to now.
I can do a Hurricanrana. Can John?
I can
That's
do
true.
A
you can. Not
he
well.
He almost broke his neck.
Yeah. Not
That's
well.
True.
He sort of can. Yeah. Bumps on
and
his
that
ass.
That pile driver he took.
Oh.
Do you guys keep up with the current WWE product
a
lot?
No, because we watch good wrestling. So like, we'll go back to like the 90s.
No, not TNA.
Not TNA.
Hey, you guys got $20. We're trying to take a collection to buy TNA if you're interested.
Yeah.
Sorry, man. That's a total pocket slap right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to keep my $20. Thank you.
I don't even have $20.
No, I have that DVR shit, so.
What do you think their video collection is going to be worth?
Jack shit.
Really?
Yeah.
I would think AJ and a Sting collection would make some money.
Just go on YouTube.
Yeah, this is true.
All free. I
fucking hate YouTube.
You mean if someone wanted to buy it?
Yeah. That's like, the only thing that's really... What are they going to do? Buy the six-sided ring?
You think WWE would ever make, like, a DVD about TNA?
No.
Yes.
No. Yeah, they would.
If they bought it.
If they bought TNA,
they
sure.
If they bought the rights, they would.
They did it for WCW.
Match collection?
Dude, they did it for everybody else. WCW, ECW, Mid-South.
I mean, everyone else, I think, had a legacy and had some awesome story to tell. What story does, other than Jeff Jarrett and Jerry Jarrett founding it, what great story does TNA have?
You got AJ Styles. You've got the continuation of Sting's career. You've got guys like the Motor City Machine Guns.
A Sting DVD, yes. That's 100%.
Ken Shamrock, our guest tonight,
former
was the NWA. First TNA NWA champion.
Get out of his way.
You know? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I think there's a story to tell there.
Yeah, I think there's plenty. There's Joe.
I mean, match compilation.
Yes, Joe as well.
If you want to, if they end up working and for WWE and you want to do a Samoa Joe DVD, you want to do an AJ Styles
Kurt
DVD.
Kurt Angle DVD.
Yes. That's the footage. Yes,
that's
but
the
I'm talking
one.
About like an actual rise and fall of ECW type deal for TNA or
I
rise
think
of...
they could do it. If you put it, you could put enough like of the X Division matches on that DVD to supplement the
I'm not talking about
no,
I'm not talking
about
match
story.
Compilations.
No, no, but the story, but I mean you look at the rise and fall of ECW. They have like seven or eight great matches from ECW history on there too.
Right. I understand that.
I wouldn't go so far as to say great matches.
Come on.
Look, I love ECW.
Look, you can shit on you mean the ECW matches.
I love ECW, but sometimes going back and
it's rough.
Some of those matches like Stevie and Raven against the Pitbulls where Dreamer comes in.
That's the greatest match in the entire fucking history of that organization. Are you kidding me?
So much better when Dreamer comes in.
Yeah. Dude, when fucking Bill Alfonso comes out and he lifts the fucking chokeslam and the 911 fucking buries him. How great was that?
I get it how everything ties together, but it's just like if that's a once in a while thing, but it didn't get that way towards as ECW progressed. It was every New Jack match was like that.
You're
every
right. No, you're right.
Like
yes, but at that point in time, that was fucking amazing. Still one of my all time favorite matches from ECW.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
How fucking you don't agree?
Nah.
I guess I'm on an island.
So
now.
Disenchanted with pro wrestling right now, mainstream. That
I think you just don't like it because Sabu wasn't in it.
No, he was all over that DVD.
Yeah, but he wasn't in that match.
Were the extra guys ECW fans?
I was an ECW fan later on.
Later on.
Chili Willy, Christian York, Joey Matthews,
Tony DeVito.
Like Tony, the Baldies.
1999, 2000.
Vic Grimes.
2001 until it closed.
Right. How long you guys been wrestling for?
Me on and off about 7 years.
Oh, wow.
I've been here for seven years.
And I just completed my 1 year.
Nice.
Congratulations.
Yes. And who did you train with? You train with the Samoans too?
No, unfortunately, but I did train in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Scranton.
I'd say Scranton.
Scranton.
Yeah.
Who runs a school out in Scranton?
His name is Justin Glory. He used to work for World Star Wrestling.
How was
a competitor of WXW and then
yeah.
in Connecticut.
How was that school?
It's pretty good. He has about 30
He's
students
still running
now.
It,
Yeah.
Small little, but it's a really nice training facility, and you know it was my, you know, job to really get out there after I completed it.
Right.
So, you know,
how is the business treating you so far after a year?
Oh, fast.
It goes fast,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, you guys have come together pretty good. I mean, like you're all over the place.
Yeah.
That's pretty good after just 1 year. You know, absolutely.
I kickstart my career with my debut. I debuted on House of Hardcore against Viscera.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was his debut.
What did that feel
Holy
like?
Holy shit.
Is he still monstrous?
He's actually, I just talked to him, to be honest with you, and by the spring, he's going to be in a major motion picture with Beyonce. He said, I'm in 85% of the movie.
He is 85% of the movie.
Why not?
Is he still that big? I thought he lost weight.
He did lose weight.
Yeah, he did. Last time we saw him, it
was FWE in Brooklyn.
Yeah, he said he lost like 80 pounds. But
that's like he took a shit.
Yeah, I was going to say he took a shit.
He chopped off his left
tip. I thought he got his left pec removed.
Yeah, that's you won't notice 80 pounds.
He says he's doing great losing weight.
Dude, all right, is he following your plan?
Yeah, of course. I had to sit him down, which wasn't hard, and tell him, this is not the right thing to do, man. You got to do this, that, diet plan.
And
now
he's following along.
He's exclusively working with kettlebells.
Good for him. Good for him.
Like Kettle One?
Does he still go?
Yes.
Does he still use Big Daddy V on indies? Or what is he?
Yeah, he's Big Daddy V.
Big Daddy V?
But
he should be King Mabel.
It's not complete until he puts the contacts in.
That's true. So when you showed up, did you know you were working with him before you got there or when you got there?
There was like hints of it. Like I wasn't sure. And then we were pulled to the side and I was told.
Oh my God. That's
Did you grow up a wrestling fan?
Yes, I did.
So you're like, I'm wrestling King Mabel tonight.
I'm like, for the most part, I'm like Attitude Era.
Yeah, so that's a big deal because he was a big deal during the Attitude Era.
Well, that whole locker room that night for that first Horse of Hardcore show was...
Horse of Hardcore?
I thought you said Hearts of Hardcore.
Horse of Hardcore?
House of Hardcore was, I mean, that was a... pretty much a WWE roster from top to bottom.
Yeah.
Roster.
Yeah,
that's it was 1 year. 1 year in the business.
Carlito, who else was it?
Less than a year at that point.
When I reached my 1 year
Wow.
Who else works those events? You got Carlito, right? And Chris Morrison? Masters. Does Morrison work?
Masters.
Morrison did in Morrison Philly. Did the Philly Hustle Hardcore 2.
Carlito was their champ, right? Or
FWE's champ.
FWE's champ, okay. Yeah.
Dreamer, of course.
Dreamer, obviously. Yeah, Dreamer,
Terry Funk.
They got Lance Storm coming in.
He's really nice guy.
Do they have Lance Storm coming in?
Yeah.
When
is that?
Next show. You guys, are you guys going to be on the next show, right?
Yep. It's Saturday.
Let's plug that. Band is split up.
No.
We're going to be doing, single stuff.
Single stuff. What? But you'll still be there together.
Yeah.
In spirit.
Yes.
Do you guys prefer singles or tag team action?
Well, let's not get into an argument here.
No, it's... the tag team is what got us where we're at. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, we have a blast doing it.
Yeah.
Who's Shawn Michaels? Who's Marty Jannetty?
Oh, this is an easy question. Shawn Michaels. Marty Jannetty over here. Yeah. My left.
When he said that... About Shawn Michaels, he pointed to me. Just so you know.
Oh, God.
So you guys work as a tag team. Do you do a lot of studying of the older tag teams? You mentioned you like to watch a lot of 90s wrestling.
Yeah. Well, we also have Head Shrinker Samu, giving us pointers, too.
Yeah, you can't really go wrong with that guy.
Right.
In terms of tag team wrestling.
Right.
And that guy talking to you.
Occasionally, we talk to the Bendejos in Florida, Jay Rios.
Jane Hurz.
And The Now.
The Now up in New York.
Vic Delicious and
Right. Yeah. So you guys have a wealth of knowledge coming in for tag teams.
Yeah.
That's good. That's something I feel like is definitely missing is just a solid tag team. I mean, you guys, you have the gimmick, you have the music, you have like the outfits. I mean, like that's definitely missing today in professional wrestling. And I'm glad there's teams like these guys that to bring it back, to make it interesting. It's just not like a couple of cookie cutter guys coming out to like fucking rock music and just doing a tag team thing. Like you guys have characters, you have a gimmick. It's fucking
great.
Well,
like the whole players. It's original. When we came up with the image, like we wanted it where. Right when we come through that curtain, people know what we are, who we are. They, hate us.
Where did it come from? Where was an inspiration behind Extra Guys? Like that's a clever name.
I was just driving on the highway, and I was with a buddy of mine, and
drunk driving.
And I was like, I need to come up with a name for this tag team. I was just thinking about it, and I said something with exercise, and he just blurted out, "How about exercise?"
It's fucking awesome.
I said,
awesome.
That's it.
And done. You wanted to kind of go...
Just something as simple as that.
Yeah. To be complete opposite of your actual image.
And then I wanted to also, I walked into a room, and everybody thinks I rode up on a motorcycle.
Right.
So I'm like, I need something completely out of the box. I want a challenge. So I said, what if I just start... Just decked out in neon.
Neon
bright
tights.
Neon, yeah.
Spandex,
tights,
nonetheless.
Spandex.
Yeah, just, you wouldn't guess that. I'm glad you didn't go the generic route of like, you now just, like, you could just put a bandana on, leather vest, and a biker bob, you know? Like,
yeah.
You took it out of the box.
I
you guys compliment each other because it's not like two dudes that look the same. Like, you're both, like, completely different.
Well, like the Hart like Foundation.
Or the New Age Outlaws.
Right. I was going to say, like, it's a Bret Hart, Jim the Anvil Neidhart.
Tommy Dreamer always told us. He's like, you guys are like the Hart Foundation.
Yeah. Like, I was just going to say, it's something like that.
Yeah, you're Bret.
Easy like Anvil.
Easy.
I got to ask the Anvil. Do you shave the hair in your stomach, the abs?
I shave everything but my face.
Because we met.
Oh.
That's for the ladies.
We met.
You got to go far, Mike. There you go.
We met Jim the Anvil Neidhart.
That's for the sign girl. They're high-fiving on the couch. This is great.
We met the Anvil, and he showed us a trick. He's very barrel-chested and stomached as well.
Years of sit-ups.
Yes, lots of sit-ups and crack.
allegedly.
You mean his butt crack?
Yes, that's what we're referring to.
Okay.
Allegedly.
He shaves his stomach hair, so it looks like he has a six-pack.
I tried that. That doesn't
work.
Doesn't.
Bullshit. If someone could pull up a picture on Facebook, he looks like he has a fucking six-pack.
I'm not even going to try
to
find
it. That. Somebody pull that out.
So if you guys run into any legal problems with the Kings of Leon, I know they should be paying you guys as, you know.
I know. They
you
stole
being the Kings of Neon first.
There's a funny story is that JP was at a concert wearing the Kings of Neon t-shirt.
We got it right here.
Oh, you got it? Okay, good.
They have the Anvil picture.
He's ridiculous.
He's got a six-pack, though, doesn't he?
From a distance, maybe. maybe it works.
He did it on purpose or is it a joke?
No, he seriously doesn't. I don't think Eddie saw that book, did he?
I saw the book. I saw it
last week, two weeks ago.
Is this from...
No, he does get a great workout from all that from, sweating.
That was from WrestleCon. Yes. Yeah,
this year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was
you guys
that.
Were there.
We were there, yeah.
I didn't meet you till a Starman's bash.
You said meet.
Oh, yeah.
The party?
Yeah.
Meet. Hey, were the sign girls at the party?
No.
Clark was there.
I saw that, yeah.
Oh,
Clark was there. Rhett Titus was there.
I'll take it, though. If you
let me look at it.
Yeah, look through it. Have a good laugh at our expense.
Yeah, basically.
I like that book. Hey, check out Matt's girlfriend in the beginning showing her tatas.
Wait, what?
There you go.
Good stuff.
You'll see her on the table there. Well, behind the table.
On the table.
Not under it, not on it.
Dusty Rhodes?
No.
I want to see my titty, see my breath,
see my breath,
will.
See my breath,
Busty Rhodes.
Rusty Rhodes.
So I slide my titties with pork and beans.
Dynamite. So you guys aren't fans right now of the current product?
Well, yeah, it could be a lot better. Yeah.
It could be a lot. What do you guys think's missing from it? Because I know I'm just, I can't watch it.
Well, considering I'm the same height as Daniel Bryant, I do wish that they would, you know, push that kind of product. And I look at, you know, those type of wrestlers as more the athletic.
Yeah.
They're the athlete of the brand.
Yeah.
You know, it's the whole idea of the big guys of a Ryback or, you know, even back to the day of Warrior and Hogan.
They
they're appealing, they're big and everything like that, but I don't think they're as mobile.
No, they can't. Athletic they can't move. Definitely not.
You know what I mean?
And what they've been doing recently, like they had Daniel Bryan pushed and he got over on his own. The crowd responded to him like he could have been huge.
Yeah.
But it seems like Vince still has a hard-on for the big guys. They cut his legs out from under him, just pull him right out of the scene, drop them back into like the mid-card, it seems, and now they're going with Big Show and Randy Orton for the title. I mean,
no sense. When has Big Show ever drawn for them as a main event guy?
And
it just doesn't make sense
as a main event babyface especially.
And they set up Bryan and CM Punk to take on the Wyatt boys.
So let them, like, have their thing.
And
but
you know what, though? No, I'm a huge fan of the Wyatts.
Because
of the beards.
Because of the beards.
Okay.
And well, that and they're also an amazing...
No, you know, I think that's...
Yeah.
And they
all can work. Like, they're great wrestlers.
The Wyatts are my favorite thing in wrestling.
That should be a phenomenal...
Take what you just said and say the opposite. I can't stand the Wyatts.
Really? Why is that?
Why?
I just don't think...
They're unorthodox type of...
I just don't think Bray Wyatt's all that talented. He had that fucking match against fucking Kane.
Let's get this guy out of here.
Against Kane. You can't judge someone in a match against Kane.
Dude, people said that a year ago.
I'm out outside 5 minutes.
People said that a year ago about Goldust, and he's fucking rocking shit.
Goldust
was never
bad. I've never
seen fucking Dustin Runnels move so fast in my life.
He's doing real well.
Goldust was never bad.
DDP Yoga.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. He doesn't have to rely on getting guys in the penis anymore.
I have a funny Goldust story, actually. First time I met Goldust.
Oh, no.
Was a year or so ago at the Northeast Wrestling Under the Stars thing they did with Houghton and Piper and all that.
Fish Hill, New York?
Fish Hill, New York.
Yeah.
So I met Goldust backstage, and I walked up to him to shake his hand, you know, and he's like, you know, in his shit situated. And all of a sudden, I...
Sounds like my girlfriend telling a story.
Yeah.
I thought your girlfriend with you on top of her.
Wait, so I
hurry up.
So I'm waiting
to,
you know, shake his head. He's putting his shit down. And all of a sudden, I smell shit. I'm like, what the fuck? I smell
shit. You when you met Goldust?
That's the funny thing. Yeah. It's usually you.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, he must have farted or something right then when he put his shit down. He turns around. He's like, hey, Dustin. He's like, sorry, man. I just shit my pants.
His muffler fell out.
I was like, oh, all right.
I'm dining on
nice to meet
beans.
You, buddy. Nice guy. One of the nicest guys I ever met.
That's cool.
Matt doesn't like Goldust.
No. You know
Why
what?
Not?
You fucking blow this all out of proportion.
Matt bothered Goldust.
No, I didn't bother him. He put up something. Here's my rule. I don't speak English well, so I butcher everything that comes out of my mouth on the show, and then everybody makes fun of me. Behind the scenes, I have a huge hand in booking a lot of these guests. Mm-hmm. So he put his fucking email on Twitter. So I shot him an email like,
"Hey, I booked these guys."
Yes.
So just give me this.
You
give me this.
Tons of credit for Lance Storm and a lot of other guests too.
And the extra guys.
I just want credit for the extra guys. Okay. I don't want anyone to know about anyone else I booked.
I booked Scott Keith and then I had to interview him all by myself.
Well, everybody left.
Which
the
was
room.
A great interview.
Yeah,
by
it
the
was
way.
A great interview. Tell Scott Keith that his rants are slacking.
What?
Because he's ranting off Hulu now.
I fucking sent him an email and asked him if he wanted to do the show to promote any upcoming events in the New York, New Jersey area. And he was like, "This is for booking only. I don't do interviews. Why would I want to talk?" And I'm like, "All right, whatever, you fuck."
Wait, was that
fucking rude?
That was Goldust.
That wasn't
Scott still? Keith. Okay. Yeah, I know. I almost got lost there too. I'm like, "Why are you bothering Scott Keith to see what he wants to promote in New York?"
So you worked Mabel, Viscera. Yes. What's the biggest name that you've been in the ring with?
Oh, we did with the Patriot.
Patriot, Viscera. Yeah.
Where'd you work with the Patriot?
It FWA. Was a rumble. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Rumble
Chris there. Masters.
Chris Masters, we were in there with.
Spike
Dudley.
Oh, nice.
He's been with Spike twice now.
Yeah. Ooh, how so good he went back again.
That's right.
It's that Dudley dick.
Gay on the show.
I didn't realize he was still doing it.
No, he just does appearances.
He's retired, but he just does HOH
for House of Hardcore.
Gotcha. So.
Does he wrestle for them?
No, he just does
run-ins. He just shows up?
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Viscera, he saved my ass twice. Down,
he does then... run-ins. Does he still take the throw into the 15th row?
No. No.
I think those days are over.
Oh, my God. First time I saw that, I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
The and then he
Bam
did it
Bam
on every
Bigelow.
Show.
Yeah, every show. Insane. God you guys ever it. Have an issue in the ring with anybody?
Any beef?
He has.
Uh-oh.
I think people. Oh, okay. I think too, a lot of people are just scared of me. So.
Do you not want to say?
Well, no, it was just a smaller venue, like a smaller show. It was like a fair.
Who'd
in,
you work with?
Pottsville,
oh, Pennsylvania, Pottsville.
Yeah, Yingling Brewery, brother.
Yes, sir. Pottsville's right across the way from Shamokin, just in case you didn't know.
Thank you.
Two no-name guys. They don't even. You wouldn't even know them if I told you.
So let's not even mention their names.
Oh, no.
They didn't
want to
play.
Names. You might know them.
They didn't want to play. You know, they
you're
couldn't
not
play well
them.
With others.
They couldn't. They didn't want to work
own town.
Well.
That's it.
So, you know,
we hear stories. Actually, those stories.
Oh, you stiffed?
Slipped. Come on now.
Slipped.
I don't want to get in trouble.
Okay, I love hearing slipped. Stories like that. Payback stories. Those are the fucking best stories in wrestling. Yeah. Nothing's really like done maliciously, but it's kind of like, you got to come into you.
Yeah.
And then that's it.
Well, sometimes I think things are done maliciously.
You had a problem one. Yeah, that was it. Yeah,
that's the only time you guys ever had
a vet
issue.
Who then asked me what we're doing.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
He said he was an 8-year vet, and yet he had to ask him what.
Who's
what
like probably what, 5 months into the business at this point?
Yeah,
literally, yeah,
pretty much.
Wow.
I think my favorite line in the wrestler was when he was going to take on what the fuck was the cat's name? The Sultan,
the Ayatollah,
and he's like, "What do you want to do?" He goes, "What do you mean? What do you want to do? You're the face. I'm the heel," and he just walks away from him.
Now, do you guys do this like the old school way? Because a lot of guys nowadays that are coming up like to, you know. Plan everything, move for move.
Yeah, are you Brad Armstrong or Diamond Dallas Page?
That's a good comparison.
I'm more of a Brad Armstrong.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I just like...
You just
as
like
long
to
as
go
I know
it.
The finish, we'll get there.
Yeah. Well, I don't necessarily need Cookie? To know move for move,
watching my ass.
But I like to have a clear picture
too.
In my head of what we can do.
Right.
And like, you know, if whoever I'm going against, if they can like, you know, clearly understand or... give some insider ideas to it, I feel more like I feel better about the whole situation. I feel uneasy when someone's like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah. Like, you just want to go into something feeling confident.
And then
right?
I get in the ring, what are we doing? Yeah. And I'm like, I'm going to punch you right in the fucking face.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
I worked one EI in East Stroudsburg. I just got there late to the show. I put on the show late. They put me with their worst EI on the roster.
Oh,
about
oh yeah.
And, so he comes up to me, I'm putting my shit on, and first of all, his breath smells like he ate a turd sandwich, so that's number one.
He's probably eating Dustin's ass.
Yeah. So, we do the opener, I say, listen, this is how we're going to do the opener, I specifically haul different things, bell rings, he just comes at me like Bart Simpson windmill.
Oh.
I'm like, what are you doing?
Hey, homie.
Jacks me in the jaw. So I'm like, all right, toss him out. I shit hand him out of the ring, and there's no padding. I just body slammed him as hard as I could on the floor.
Good for you.
I was like, that's it.
Good for you.
Chopped him a few times just after the finish, and that was it.
I mean, like, I couldn't imagine doing what you guys do, like, all the time. It must be, like, to me, I'd be fucking nervous all the time, like, nerve-wracking. You don't know what you're walking into.
Oh, you should see us in the
locker room. Oh, my God.
You know what the worst is?
The loudest, most rambunctious guys in the locker room.
What used to annoy me was you get all your gear on, you're ready to go, and then all of a sudden the fucking butterflies hit, and you got to take the nastiest piss, and you're just like, oh. When I was in the locker room one
usually
time.
Usually shit.
I never got that bad. Usually
what's
my
a
asshole.
Nasty piss.
Like, you really gotta go. Like, fucking worse than a racehorse.
So, like, smell?
You never had smelly piss?
I have. I just don't. I never really classified
couple
it as
couple, two,
nasty
three
piss.
Coffees.
All right. How about a wicked piss? Is that better?
A wicked piss.
You gotta
say
yeah,
I gotta take a wicked piss, you cocksucker.
There you go. That's
that boy. All right. Is that better?
Fucking up the soundboard again and all kinds of shit there.
I fucking look over at Mike Dell and he's like, you nervous? He goes, yeah. I'm like, hey, I gotta piss so bad. He goes, fuck me too. And I'm already fucking ready to go out.
Did you guys touch dicks?
Yeah, of course. We docked.
Don't cross the streams, Ray.
No, we docked before we went out. We had a great match, so.
You know there's two Mike Dells.
I was about to say. Yeah,
I was going
to
say Mike Dell.
Not your Mike Dell.
Not a Mike Dell.
There's another Mike Dell.
Oh, you totally had me.
No, well.
Tony did some wrestling way back in the day.
Way back in the fucking about long ago.
13 years ago.
Yes.
ECPW, Gino Caruso style.
Oh, that's the company that I worked a shit bat at.
Oh, ECPW?
You see?
Yeah.
And you said
you
wouldn't
know.
Would
I, hear that a lot. I hear ECPW and shitbag like together all the time.
Oh, yeah.
This is our not shocked face.
Yeah, like, yeah. Oh, okay. That makes
well,
sense.
He's at a
the comments
branch.
Of Shining
one of them was
Eddie.
In Strasburg. That's where I ended up.
Yeah, they do
night.
Like.
And it was like a random Friday night, and they were like, I went with a buddy of mine, and we went down, and we got put on last, you know, last minute.
Right, right.
How long ago was this?
Last February.
Can we guess?
What was the story that you guys were telling me at the last PWS show in the parking lot while we were not consuming alcoholic beverages?
No.
Why the hell would we do that?
I thought that's very
immoral. We're watching
that by a police station.
In the parking lot of a police station.
Oh, yeah, basically. That's
what
as
it opposed was. To other things Kevin likes to do in the parking lot next to the police station.
Punch right. The clown in his car.
You guys were telling me how you were working this show. I don't remember where it was. I'm not sure if it was South Jersey or Maryland.
I haven't heard punching the clown in like years. It's
hitchhiking
bad.
Under the covers.
And you guys, you never worked there before. You weren't from the area, and they wanted to put you in the main event.
Oh yeah. That was just recently.
Oh wait, yeah.
A couple of weeks.
Yeah.
PPW. It's I actually like PPW,
show?
But what
was that the show?
It was a hot
no.
crowd. No.
No, it was no. It was a different show. It was in what was that? Wilkes-Barre?
McAdoo.
Oh, McAdoo, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
McAdoo, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. It's over by Hazleton.
Okay.
McAdoo.
And we show up.
My God, why do you know so much about Pennsylvania?
That's where we're from.
Scranton, PA, man.
Fucking crazy.
I'm repping.
You ever go to Tink's?
That place shit the bed.
Did it?
Yeah.
That's a bar up in up in Scranton.
And then it was the Hardware Bar. And then it became, now it's Mulligan's.
Oh, all right. Oh.
Yeah, it's still a shit show.
What was the other one? It begins with the O, not Oliver.
Not The Office.
No, not The Office.
Which is the show that's supposed to be based in Scranton.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Yeah,
how's
yeah,
that
yeah.
for irony?
What the fuck is the name of it?
All comes
cheers.
Back around.
Anyway, whatever.
Oliver's.
Oscar
but they
Myers.
They wanted to put you guys, in the first time you ever worked there, and you weren't planning on going back, and they wanted you in the main event.
When,
and
our idea is when we got there, I was like, all right. One and done. I hope we're curtain jerkers. We're getting the fuck out of here.
We're getting out of there.
Going to the closest
bar.
I mean,
and
we're going to go watch the
news.
Was it that bad?
No.
That's our play with every show. No.
Well, it was relatively close to where I live. So I wanted to get home and like maybe go out and enjoy, you know.
So we get there.
Yeah, have a bit of a weekend or something.
Know their strategy.
Yeah, put them on first.
This guy's been trying to book us for a while, since August.
Who's this guy?
All
right. Wow, we look real good right now.
Anthony McHeaton.
Yes.
It's all right, man. If you know names, drop names. We
Anthony McHeaton. So anyway, he's nice enough to put us, and he's trying to get us since August, but it wasn't working. We were in Florida in August, then September, we saw PWS doing Railway.
Yeah.
And then so he finally got us. So we show up first time in the locker room. We're sitting in the corner, just, you know. Twiddling our thumbs, waiting for the show to start. He comes up. He goes, all right, you guys are in the main event. We're like, huh? And he's like, yeah, and you guys are going over. I'm like, what?
What the fuck is this?
He's
you
like,
know
yeah,
why?
We're doing a tag team tournament. We want to put you guys over huge. I'm like, we never stepped in here before. Like,
he
all
saw,
right.
He saw you guys, that you had matching tights, and you guys looked like you knew what you were doing. And he's like, I could fucking base my promotion around these guys.
You could do something with them.
Well,
and pay them $10.
No.
No, we...
You got a hot dog?
No, I gotta
think about it.
Did I?
Oh, hot dog?
No.
He took care of them. Yeah. He took care of them.
Yeah, of course
he did. He gave us like a handful of Tootsie Rolls.
So you guys gonna go back there now?
Yeah. No, yeah, he wants to.
Well, you have to. You're the reigning champions.
Well, no, we're not champions yet. He doesn't have belts.
We gotta win those fair and square. Come on.
Fair and square, says he.
This shit's real, man.
Fair and square.
Goddamn right.
The tournament's in Rio next month.
Listen, kayfabe, brother.
Yeah. Kayfabe,
how we break kayfabe every week on the show. Unfortunately. Now let me ask you guys a question.
Ooh, sure. Go ahead.
Good idea, Matthew.
So we've been doing this podcast for almost 2 years now, and I've kind of adapted the lingo. So I kind of sort of call everybody brother. Mm-hmm. Do you do that, and does it feel awkward when you call a black guy brother? Because I work in the food industry.
Better than calling him something else.
True, but I do it. I'll be like, "What's up, brother? What can I get you?" And then I'm like, God, I sound like a fucking dick.
Listen, the worst thing you can do is call black and the N word, neighbor. All right, don't ever do that.
Wow, pipe bomb.
Matt just made a new best friend.
Wow.
Punch the clown.
What are you guys doing later?
But brother, shoot. I work in a gym, and I call everybody brother.
Yeah, me too.
But here's the thing.
Yeah, when I work at the gym,
I don't work at the gym now. I just call everybody brother. But I say, I use it with an A. You can't put an R on it. That's racist.
Brother?
But JP and I, we say brother a different way. We do it the Tommy Dreamer way. Brother.
Hi, brother.
Yeah, brother.
Nice.
Yeah. Another question.
Hey, brother.
I don't know if this was just the 90s or if it's carried over. But sometimes when I meet these guys, like you guys or wrestlers in the back, whatever, mm-hmm. I'll shake hands with them.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a very light handshake.
No, I shake your hand.
Like
I
a real man, right? Like we shook like real men. But is that something you guys were taught, like a kayfabe shake, like
I
a light shake?
I take two hands and shake with, and I squeeze as hard as
like
I
it's
can.
A shake weight,
just
right?
So, yeah, just so they know I mean business, bro.
I'm still such a pussy when it comes to that. Even though it's the right thing to do, you got to go shake everyone's hand, but I still don't.
You don't?
Well, I try to, but it scares the shit out of me sometimes.
Really?
Because I'm still a mark.
I shake somebody's hands if I ever shake them on the street.
Usually everybody shakes normal.
Like normal, yeah.
Gene Snitsky almost took my goddamn arm out of the socket.
Oh. Well, he's a baby killer. What'd you expect?
I know. He was licking his chops when he saw me.
I'm sure he was.
Our interview with the Extra Guys is brought to you by Lillian Garcia.
That was the Charlie Haas when he made it.
Just her screaming. It's just the one
That's
scream.
Awesome.
It's the one scream.
Do you guys remember that when he knocked her off the ring apron?
He hit the ropes and she just went flying. Right.
We love playing that on
Charlie
the show.
Haas's crowning moment. So plug some more upcoming appearances you guys have.
Well, this Saturday we have the House of Hardcore.
That's
up
a big deal.
Yeah, it's
HOH3, brother.
Who you guys working? Gonna be there.
We did the first two. We're in the Hardcore. He's doing a Hardcore Rumble, which is pinfalls, submissions, and over the top all out.
Wow. My God.
So, yeah. It's going to be
So I take it you guys are going to roll under the bottom rope to start off.
I'm in a high under the ring.
I'm literally going to go right after this son of a bitch and punch him right in the fucking
face.
Yeah,
we're in it. Do it.
That would be great.
So we're just going to beat the hell out
of him. He gave me TMJ one time. I don't want to tell you how, but he gave it to
some
me.
Some people are not taking junk? Money for that.
Too much junk.
Force feed me good. A protein shake.
Ew.
That's a big deal being booked on
eggs.
The House What's of Hardcore shows.
Yeah. Well, we did this the first and second one.
That's
really cool. I worked with... his students and Danny Doring. We both captained each team.
Right.
And then his students. And he wrestled his...
Ben Ortiz. Who is going against Sanjay Dutt.
Yeah, okay.
Saturday.
Very good. Yes. Sanjay, awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Okay. we have that. And then we have, I believe, FWE up in December 7th.
Yeah.
Over in Elmhorn Center.
Nice.
I think it's in Brooklyn, New York.
Good stuff. So how many times a month do you guys pretty much book? Because you guys
almost
seem to be
every weekend.
All over
it's
the
rare
That's
now.
Awesome.
It's rare now that we are off.
And it's always the first match of the show.
That's what we like.
7 o'clock bell time, 7:10 back in the car.
That is fantastic.
Sometimes I have my ear off before I even leave the ring.
Now what's your ultimate goal? Is this something you guys want to do for many years to come? Is this just like something you guys want to do on weekends, or you want to hope to make it like all the way up?
Yeah, if you're not in this to make a bait, then you're in the wrong
business. I was going to ask you, does everybody share that same mentality?
That we work with?
That you work with, or that you catch a vibe, that you run across, that are people content with doing it? I mean, House of Hardcore, I'm not trying to shortchange anything you guys are doing, because House of Hardcore is a big deal. PWS is a big deal. These shows are FWE. These are big deals. But are people content with that level?
I would maybe. We've worked shows where there's guys who, like, they've just worked
the weekend warriors.
They're content with that, warriors, but... Yeah, and they're content with that. And then there's other guys that strive to make it huge.
But, like, in all honesty, like, just my 1 year, like, I just want to keep on going. But the, like, most important thing, obviously, everybody's dream is to go to the Fed.
Right.
Big,
yeah.
You know, New York there.
Why
you cut me off? Jesus. Man.
He's
having a sentimental moment here.
He's had a few. Sorry. He's feeling no pain.
Continue.
But I'm just saying, like, you know, I want to become a little bit better known, you know, before I get my opportunity. If it comes early, then so be it. And I had an opportunity with we worked Vintage Wrestling in Florida and then Ring Warriors down almost near, North Miami?
It was at Miami,
Yeah. Florida.
So. Wow.
That's good. I mean, I'm glad that it's still there, that people still want them. Because a lot of the guys you do see just feel like they're okay with that, like we said. But it's, if you want to, you know, make it, that's you got to be there. Like, and you guys are getting booked every – how often do you train? Do you guys train, or are you still
once a week?
Once a week?
You know.
Twice.
I help run Sundays. The school that he came from. So I'll go down there once
in
a week.
In Pennsylvania?
Yeah, in Scranton. And I'll help, you know, with the students.
These guys are in the gym every day. They can't get to
every
the
day.
Ring. They can't get to the
ring.
No, but they can't get to the ring. They don't have time.
What did you mean? Yeah, you meant training.
In the ring. In-ring
training. In-ring, yeah. Once a week I try to get down there.
Tuesdays, like tonight. Oh, wow.
Wow.
Sorry.
Was that what I was going to call somebody?
I think I shit myself.
You sound like ill dust over there.
Welcome. Welcome to the studio.
Now, is it hard for you guys to get your foot
it's
in the
hard,
door
right?
for, like, a Ring of Honor or Dragon Gate USA? Is that the next? Because it's very rarely that you find somebody or a tag team that goes from A
to B
to Z. You know, right to the Federation or Z to A, whatever you want to put it at, where they're stepping stones. Is that the route you guys want to take?
I mean, you're...
No, you go. Go ahead.
No, I don't know. I mean, a year ago, if you were to tell me where we were at in just under a year, you know, I mean, I'm surprised we're here and doing this well.
I know. We're surprised we're here in the basement, too.
I know.
He's like, what
I didn't
the
mean
fuck?
Here.
We usually do it on the sidewalk.
He meant
these
where
guys
they
are walking up
going, in their
Christmas
careers.
Lights to the stairs? What the fuck
it's
is
not
this?
All about you all the time.
I like it. It's nifty.
It is nifty.
No, I did that because when the PWS sign girls were here, nobody was nice enough to hold their hands and walk them out. I almost had them falling down the stairs.
Oh, come on. They're nice girls.
No, they are. We love
no, they that. Are. I just didn't want them to die on my fucking property. Yeah, they did bring us a present. What did you guys bring us?
Beer.
Shaq Daddy.
They brought Kevin a present. No fucking Kings and Neon t-shirts? Nothing?
Yeah, you cheap bastard. Yeah, why not?
I'll take that shirt.
I think we're sold out. You know what?
We'll trade up. We'll trade up in November. I'll see you at Rahway.
Yeah, we'll be. Me and Eddie will be back there.
I will also be there as a fan.
There you go.
Good for you.
And I will have the recorder and not talk to anybody because I'm a pussy.
We need to see more extra guys in Rahway.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. Well,
you know, we
tell
need more
us
PWS.
That. Tell Mr. Pat Button.
Yeah. You know what I'm just going to do? I'm going to make an awesome Titantron for you guys and just give it to him and be like, dude, this needs to be played. And they need to be booked.
Hey, we're in.
And then Kathy's going to make you a sign and then you guys will be on your way.
That's all you need is a Titantron and a sign girl sign.
Hey, did you get a sign back, by the way?
Yeah, it's in my trunk.
Really?
Yeah.
You got to bring it in. I got to hang it up over here.
All right.
You'll see the purple glitter where you're sitting, actually.
That fell out of Kathy's vagina.
Yes.
At least she decorates it.
She vajazzles.
That's a lot of glitter.
Holy shit.
She's vajazzled. She's vajazzling.
She is vajazzled. So what do we have coming up soon, Mr. Tony?
We have Ken Shamrock. In just a few minutes.
Yes, we do.
Mr. World's Most Dangerous Man, Mr. King of Pancrase, King of the Ring, former NWA champion, former UFC champion, UFC Hall of Famer.
King of the Ring.
The list goes on and on.
And he was snubbed.
And he was part of the union.
And he was
not too many guys can say that.
Yes,
yeah. Snubbed by the UFC. Group, man.
We are the union.
Yes,
that was like a week.
Sorry, that was tugboat. That was just close. Like,
do we?
No,
do
tugboat
we even,
works for the union.
Do we even dare? Condolences go out to Fred Ottman, whose father unfortunately passed away last week.
That was a bummer.
Poor Uncle Fred.
Past guest of the show. Poor Uncle Fred. Thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers.
Go out to Freddie Ottman.
Definitely.
But do we even want to touch on Raw? Did anyone watch Raw?
I watched Raw. I had to shut it off when the Big Show was getting his shit kicked out of him at the end of the show.
20 minutes, yeah.
Okay. It's just ridiculous. Like, nobody comes out to help him. It's like, really? Whatever.
That's my biggest pet peeve in wrestling, where babyfaces pick and choose. I think I may have talked about this on a show like months ago, but when babyfaces pick and choose when they want to save somebody.
Yeah.
Like, 1 week they all come out to help Daniel Bryan, and then now they don't do anything.
Yeah, like, all of a sudden the fucking Goldust and Cody don't care about the Shield, like, out of the blue, and the Usos don't care either.
Back in the day, especially in like Mid-South and like the Southern, like every single time there was a beatdown, baby faces would come out every time.
Yeah, even in WWF, it may have been like the Bulldogs and like Tony Garea, but at least somebody
came
out, you know?
I mean, they might get their ass. It could have been jobbers. It could have started out as jobbers. And other guys came out. And now it just pisses me off to no end that you pick and choose when you want to come make a save.
Does it piss you off more that when a save is being made, and I know we've gone over
here
before.
We go. The I know
fucking
what you're saying.
Entrance music. It's so fucking retarded.
Yeah. Let me just keep beating the shit out of my opponent as, you know, glass shatters.
I have an opposing view on that. I actually don't mind it, and I'll tell you why. Because if the music gets my attention, maybe if something else gets my attention, that lessens what I'm doing to beat this guy down, and it makes me stop and actually, all right, well, if someone's coming down, I know it,
but
I gotta get ready to fight somebody else.
It kills the
now.
Realism of it, though, because is it like, does the guy that's gonna run out and save someone, like, run upstairs to the sound guy and go, hit my music, and then run downstairs?
No, I mean,
like,
I understand just, like, all those points, but I don't, I have no problem
with
it.
It's suspension of disbelief, and here's the thing that I liked. Guys like New Jack, guys like Austin, when their music would hit, what would they do? Everybody look to the left. What does he do? He comes out through the crowd, through the right, and kicks the shit out of everybody. Yeah. Surprise, brothers. Surprise.
No, I agree.
That worked. That I enjoyed.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
So you watched all of Raw?
I watched most
bits
of
and pieces.
Raw. I watched
all of Raw.
I forgot it was
the
on.
The six-man match.
Did you enjoy the CM Punk Luke Harper match?
I did.
Ben Harper,
yeah.
And Reno Riggins.
But I'll tell you, I enjoyed the return of Tyson Kidmore. I'll tell you that much.
You know what? It's about time they fucking
An
took
athlete.
Natalie.
Yes. Finally.
Tyson Kidd was trending worldwide.
It's about time they took her away from the fucking great Kali and Hornswoggle.
Oh, yeah.
Because right there, you had the two best women wrestlers in the ring.
Hornswoggle.
Who? Her and Tyson Kidd.
No, Summer Rae.
Summer Rae can go.
She's going to be a fucking huge star.
Yeah.
Because she can wrestle.
Yeah, Tyson Kidd's back, which is badass to me.
But the only reason they brought him back is because the Diva Show.
The Diva Show, of course. That's their mentality.
Sometimes that's all you need. You just need that one reason to come back.
He had a good match. There was a good match with Fandango and Summer Rae.
Was
even
it really?
Fandango. That's another story that we keep talking about.
Yeah.
I'm giving you music.
How did you feel about Big E's match against Orton?
That's actually the one thing I didn't see. I did not see.
I didn't even know they worked.
Racist.
Well, no, because he won the. I know they were having the vote thing.
Where the lights go out and all you saw
don't
is
start with because they voted on some like what's the best like
what was that?
Sorry,
I missed that whole thing about the voting.
I missed it too, but they did some fucking fan vote where it was like what's the bigger championship match.
Admit, was it? Did they give you three choices?
There was three choices.
What's happening?
Michaels and Hart.
Listen to the replay.
Michaels and Hart, Warrior Hogan, and then I think the other one was like.
Was this a 2K14 sort of deal?
I don't know what the fuck it was, but those two didn't win. I think it was something shitty like Cena Rock.
Who's this?
And then Biggie Langston was representing that match? Is that?
I guess. I'd have to
go back and
watch it.
You know what
kills
me? Curtis Axel lost 50-50 booking
to Dolph.
To Dolph Ziggler.
Well, can't complain because we always bitch about Dolph not getting wins. So.
Yeah, but Curtis Axel, they're trying to build him as like the next.
All those ships have
just
sailed.
Just an utter failure.
The Daniel Bryan ship sailed.
How long till Kofi Kingston wins the Intercontinental Belt?
Does it matter?
That belt meant so much.
I know that was the belt. That was the wrestler's title.
One of my favorite. I mean, there's a lot of great IC title matches, but besides Michaels and Razor, I think Triple H and Rock at Highway to Hell, which is one of my top like pay per views. Like of all
that's
time,
SummerSlam Highway to Hell, right? Yeah, the one at the Garden.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Double J versus X-Pac hair match.
Yes,
yeah. Ken Shamrock, Owen Hart.
We'll be talking to in a few minutes.
Yes,
actually, very very short.
No, Lions Den match.
I love that's what I wanted to bring up, and hopefully we're going to talk about that with.
Let's get that stuff. And then Outlaws versus Mankind
and Kane.
And
right?
Kane was in the dumpster.
Yeah.
Undertaker and Kane were in cahoots.
Yeah.
They weren't cahoots all along.
No, that was a sick pay-per-view. That's
yeah.
Good
Austin, Taker. It was awesome. Yeah.
Is there anything else we have to plug for these guys?
What else you guys got?
We have Twitter at The Extra Guys. Facebook.com/ The Extra Guys. We have actually workout tips on there.
It's fucking awesome.
I saw that. I actually just saw that right now. Actually.
Yeah, workout tips. We got promos. We got
promos
matches.
Oh, yeah. Promos.
What the hell did you think?
What the hell did you think?
I thought you said homos.
No.
Wow.
Promos.
Come on.
Yeah, guys. Definitely check them out. They're doing big things. House of Hardcore, Saturday, September 9th. Bell time is at 7:30 at the Mid-Hudson Civic Center in Poughkeepsie, New York.
Mid-Hudson Civic Center. That reminds me of like watching like Wrestling Challenge.
That's
the
a historical place you guys are working at.
Lord Alfred Hayes would be like, the Mid-Hudson Civic Center.
It's funny. Tommy has a school right in the Mid-Hudson Civic Center.
That's
the
crazy.
Yeah,
school.
Right on the stage.
Wow.
On the stage of
I thought you were going to say he's like running out of like the bowels of the building. Like he cut a padlock off somewhere. One of the old fucking garage doors.
Terry Funk's working that show.
Oh.
Yeah, Terry Funk. Lance Storm.
X-Pac, Carlito.
You guys are going to be in great company.
I'm jealous.
Both of them.
Both DiBiases.
That's a who's who roster right
beautiful
there.
People.
Beautiful people. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Ted
DiBiase. Who are in front of me right now.
MVP, beautiful Matt people. Hardy,
is Virgil going to be there with Ted DiBiase?
Petey Williams.
Lance Anoa'i.
He will be there.
He's going to be there.
Who's he? Do you know who he's
wrestling? We know Lance very well.
He might be in the Battle Royal.
Not sure.
Lance
could be in the Battle Royal.
He makes great 8x10s.
I just love his wet hair.
Yes, his wet hair.
Yeah. I have the honor and privilege to see him do that. Backstage.
It's a lot
you
of,
too.
A lot of,
it's beautiful.
Yeah. For good. Do you guys start singing the Soul Glow theme?
doing the Usos
Pantene Pro V, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he should be in that commercial.
His hair is
Herbal Essence.
Him and Troy Polamalu,
right? Yeah.
Lance has beautiful hair. Not going to lie.
Is that how we're ending the segment with the extra guys?
Yes.
About Lance's
hair?
That's the name of the episode tonight. Lance
has beautiful
hair.
You guys are
going
to stick around. We're going to talk to Ken Shamrock. Whatever questions you have for him, definitely throw out there.
Yes, we'll be back. And when we come back, we will have the world's most dangerous man.
Ken Shamrock.
This is Mike Norenganger. And before there was Facebook, before Blu-ray, and before cell phones, there was the last old school generation. Join me and my co-host, Adam Henning, on The Midnight Jury as we take you on a trip back to the 80s and 90s. We debate pro wrestling, horror movies, and pop culture, all from WLW Studio South in Philadelphia. Let us transport you back to that last old school generation and join in our debate on The Midnight Jury. You can find us at facebook.com/WLW Studios, and we are available on iTunes, YouTube, and Stitcher Radio for the Shining Wizards Network at swn.shiningwizards.com.
Finish this episode of The Shining Wizards, get off that $12 whore you just tore apart, and check out Neckbreaker, the only podcast on professional wrestling and heavy metal music. Wrestling headlines, metal news, and guest interviews while your hosts get completely shit-faced. New episodes premiere every 2 weeks on neckbreaker.net or follow their lousy updates on Twitter and Facebook at NB Podcast. Just like Ziggler at the Garden, this ad is over.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
From the current to the way back, tune into Turnbuckle Throwbacks every week, exclusively on RadioInfluence.com, Buzzsprout.com, and on Stitcher.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight on the Shining Wizards podcast, we are joined by a true legend in the sport of not only professional wrestling, but mixed martial arts. He is a former World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, Tag Team Champion, King of the Ring. He is the first ever UFC heavyweight champion, ladies and gentlemen, the world's most dangerous man, Mr. Ken Shamrock. Ken, how you doing tonight?
Good. I'm doing well. Thank you for that introduction.
Oh, absolutely. You have earned that introduction. And you've been making the rounds a lot lately. I've been seeing your name pop up everywhere. There's a lot going on, especially I want to take it back. I want to go right into this. The UFC, man, 20th anniversary. They've been doing a lot of stuff. They're having a show coming up. And for some reason that I don't understand, you, sir, are not involved with any of this. A man that brought UFC to the table, a man that I think made UFC what it is today. What is your take on this? Why are you not involved with this 20th anniversary going on?
Well, there's a lot of guys that aren't involved. You know, I mean, if you really look at the history of the UFC, it seems like any of the guys prior to Zuffa is almost like they're banished. I mean, you look at guys like Jerry Bolander, who was really the first middleweight champion. I mean, he won that tournament. You know, you got Guy Mesker, you got Frank Shamrock. All those guys were the first middleweight champions. You look at Gary Goodrich. I mean, you just look at some of the guys out that really were fighting four times in one night, bare knuckle, no rules, that really made the UFC and the grounds for the UFC to be what it is today. It's a little bit more sanctioned and ruled, but it really was raw, and it really was guys that were in there and they were putting it all on the line for really, really no money. But you don't see any of these guys being recognized. You don't see any names. I saw Don Fry at a fight the other night, and he was sitting out in the audience. He wasn't even inside the cage. It breaks my heart when I see these things, because all these promoters are walking around with these nice little suits on, and they're acting like they're big shots, and they're inside the ring, and then you've got some of these young fighters who are up and coming. They got them sitting on the inside there, trying to promote the next fight. You got celebrities on the inside. You got these fine-looking ladies all dressed to the tilt sitting on the inside. Then you got these guys like Don Fry, myself, and a few other guys who would be sitting outside the cage, the inner circle. And I just think to myself, what is wrong with this picture? I mean, none of these people would be walking around thinking they're big shots and wearing all these things and all these people sitting on the inside and all these young fighters getting this promotion. If it wasn't for them guys who put it all on the line because they loved what they did. But yet we don't show them any love. It's like we completely forget about the past and we just move forward and we keep sucking it dry. We keep doing the things that we want to do, but we don't ever remember the past.
Now, do you think that this is happening because the past UFC wasn't as mainstream as it is now? So I guess the audience might have been a little more different. It might have been more diehard fans of MMA, whereas now UFC seems so mainstream that you see celebrities, like you said, in the audience, and just everyone's jumping on the bandwagon. Do you think that now maybe the UFC is just catering to a different audience and they don't even want to think about the past and what brought them to the dance because a lot of the audience now isn't familiar with those guys?
No, I agree with that. But listen, anything that you see in the world that usually lasts and sticks around has foundation, has history. If you can develop history and a foundation to an organization, normally the roots will go pretty deep and it'll keep growing. But the minute you try to cut that history and those roots off and try to build something that isn't on solid ground, eventually it falls apart. I believe in history. I believe in that the longer that something has history, the stronger it can become. You don't ignore how you get there. You show it. You put specials together and show people how the organization became and the guys that helped it. You look at these old school football films and these old school boxing films and even hockey back in the real rough days when you had the Russians that were dominating the hockey world and the Dream Team came along and they won. And, you know, just so much history that really it touches people's hearts and it gets them closer to what's happening today. But it just seems like that's not being done in the UFC. And there's a lot of history there that could be played upon to be able to draw the people into what they have today. And it makes it even more special. I think it would make it more special if people truly knew their roots and the struggles and some of the guys that were out there just brawling in some of the older days. and tie it into what it's doing today. I think it really gets people sucked in and attached to it. But it's not happening. They're not including the original UFC with Bob Myerwitz and SEG, and that is part of their history. It is. And it's a mistake them not doing that because, like I said, I truly believe that most people love something that has a history.
Bottom line to you, Ken, why is that? Why aren't they including the history? What does your gut tell you, and why don't you think they are including the guys that really built the foundation for the UFC? Why?
Well, personally, my opinion is I don't think they really want the new generation to know where it came from. I don't think they want people to think that they didn't start it or that they weren't the ones that created it. The longer they can keep that out, the more and more people will think that Dana White was the one that did it all. You hear it so many times on how Dana White did this and Dana White did that, and Dana White was the one that saved the UFC. And, you know, you hear all these things, and it's like that's so far from the truth. But because of the way that they film it and the way that they keep their history going, that's how they want people to believe it. But so far from the truth, because Dana White was losing that company. They were going under. Tito Ortiz was their champion. And he had nobody to really to be his adversary to be able to draw that money because he had a great personality, a great character. But nobody on the other side to help him build those numbers. So they were only bringing in about 30,000, 35,000 buys. And that's when I came in. And I came in and they blew it up. Me and Tito both, we blew it up. And so Dana White was not the guy that saved the UFC. It was me and Tito came up with this feud that saved the UFC. Dana White just happened to be in the picture and took a chance on bringing me in to do it, but he didn't believe I would do it because he didn't pay me. He said he hadn't had anybody do it yet, but if I did it, then we could, you know, work on these numbers and, you know, I get paid such and such, which that didn't happen. But nevertheless, people talk about how Dana White did it. Dana White did not do it. Me and Tito blew this company up, and we did it against what Dana White wanted to do. Dana White, and he'll tell you today, he doesn't like when guys get in each other's face and start talking smack and this and that. But that's what did it. That's exactly what did it, and that's exactly what blew it up.
Yeah, it seemed a lot more gritty back then, too. I mean, the rules were less. It was a little less sanctioned. You were talking about pay and your pay coming in. What was this something that you could, you know, live off of? Was the pay decent enough to have, like, just, like, that's all you have to do is just fight? Or did you feel like you were completely underpaid and the guys around you were underpaid? Like, what was the pay scale really like in the UFC when you came along?
Well, when I first came in, it really wasn't much money. You know, I mean, we were making $5,000-$10,000, and then if you want it, you make $50,000. And then as time went on, you know, I was making $100,000, and it, you know, it was okay. But you know, looking where the UFC was then, it wasn't really a bad pay considering it was a startup. It's a lot of money going out trying to start it up. So it, you know, it was where it was. They were always in court fighting because of sanctioning.
Yeah.
So they were spending a lot of money on attorney fees in every city we went. So, you know, it was legitimate for them on how they were trying to keep the numbers down. And, and even when UFC first got involved with Dana White and, you know, the Fertittas, they had a legitimate reason why they were trying to keep the numbers down because they definitely got into a huge debt with the old UFC. So they were trying to pay that overhead off. So I understood the beginning of it. But lying to people that shouldn't have been a part of it. But later on, as time went on and the numbers were really coming up and the money was being brought in, you know, it was almost like they didn't stop trying to keep the money from going out. You know, I knew before they were trying to pay the bills off and keep the overhead down. I understood that. But now that the overhead's paid off, the money was really rolling in. Dana White has two cars that are worth $600,000. You know, you've got $100,000 paintings on the wall. And then you got guys that are retiring, that are fighting in the main event, that are very good fighters, that can't pay their bills. See, these are the things that I think is very wrong with what we have going on today. You know, just like you know, GSP is like, you know, he doesn't want to fight for him anymore because he doesn't seem to supporting him.
Right.
There's a lot of things like that going on. And, you know, even like people had mentioned, and I don't know this for a fact, but Dana White blowing $50,000 hands in cards. And you got guys that made $6,000 to fight in the main event. See, these are things like that should not be going on. And it needs to stop, or the things that we love the most as fans is not going to be there anymore because it's going to fall apart. Second of all, they shouldn't be tearing apart Hall of Famers. Yes,
absolutely not.
Some of us may have opinions. Yes, some of us may be doing some disgruntled things because we're not happy about the end of our careers coming up. But those are things that promoters are supposed to learn how to deal with. You don't call them douchebags and effing dirtbags and never were or never have been or want to be relevant again when those are the same guys that help build your company. Because what it's doing is it's tearing apart the fan base of MMA. You got guys like Randy Couture, Tito Ortiz, Frank Shamrock, myself, you know, Jackson, Rampage Jackson,
yeah.
You know, and GSP and Gustafson and even a few of the guys that are still in there that are champs that will speak their minds as soon as their time comes. But it's the minute that things don't go the way Dana wants them to, he starts speaking out against these Hall of Famers. And every one of these guys has a huge fan base. And some of us on different sides of the fence. So what's happening here is that even if guys don't agree with me about Dana White and they take Dana White's side, then when she does something to Tito Ortiz, those same people that were on Dana's side now are going, well, wait a minute, you know, what you doing this to Tito for? So you've got all these different types of guys who have different types of fans. Dana White is attacking every single one of them, and he's tearing down the foundation of MMA. And when he should be building the foundation of MMA, he doesn't have to do everything that these guys want or myself, but he doesn't have to react the way that he reacts by putting them down. There's a lot better way and a lot more professional way to deal with disgruntled fighters who are coming to the end of their career that tend to speak out their minds on things. And if it's you don't agree on it or somebody doesn't agree on it, you don't start throwing and slinging mud at each other. That's so unprofessional.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree completely. And just to switch topics a little bit, you know, it seems like there's a lot of similarities between the going-ons with the pay scale and the way, I guess you could say, a promoter like Dana White treats his athletes. You know, you were also in the professional wrestling world where there's a lot of similarities as far as pay and promoters and the way they treat their athletes. How would you compare a Dana White to a Vince McMahon?
Vince McMahon is the kind of guy that if you're doing business for him, he'll pat you on the back, you know, he's going to be nice to you. But it's you know where you stand. You know, either you're making money for him or you're not. And that's the way it is. You know, there's other guys that have made friendship with him, you know, and that's nor here nor there. That's a choice that Vince gets to make. But I felt like Vince, you know, he let you know how it was, and he never really lied to me. I mean, not that I know of. And if he got mad or disgruntled at somebody, he didn't allow to get into business. I mean, he could have somebody that he disliked. But right. Yet, if he could find a way to make money with him, he'd put him on the show. He didn't care if there was a problem between him and them. It was about business. Whereas Dana, he'll throw away a guy who can make him money only because he either said something he didn't like or they didn't agree on a certain issue, so they'll kick him out. Just like my brother Frank. Because they didn't agree on something, Dana White kicked him out of the UFC. And that's something that Vince would not do. Vince would find a way to make it work, just like he did with Bret Hart. They didn't get along for the longest time, but Vince knew that he could use him to make money, and Bret knew that he could make money there. And so even though they at times weren't on the same page with either other, they didn't like each other, they still did business. And that's what Dana White lacks, is he doesn't know how to put aside his feelings or don't take anything personal and do business even with people you don't like.
Now, you made the transition from from UFC fighter to WWF superstar. Was it hard for you to adapt to that style where you're, I'm not going to say it's fake, but I mean, you went from punching people in the face for a living to kind of have to hold back the natural reflex to really go off and hit someone. Was that hard for you to adapt to?
No, I mean, I really I thought I picked it up fairly quickly. In 2.5 years, I probably have accomplished more than any other wrestler has ever done in the World Wrestling Federation. I went very quickly. You know, I was the Rookie of the Year, you know, King of the Ring, Intercontinental Champion, Tag Team Champion. I mean, I did a lot within a 2.5 year period.
Right.
And so I really did pick it up pretty quickly. And you know, a lot of it had to do with me making sure that I went in and made these guys understand that I knew this was a privilege for me to be here, considering I didn't put in the time that they did, and that I really appreciated them helping me, and that, you know, I'm going to be all ears and follow their lead. So it worked out well, and a lot of guys I really did work well with, you know, and felt like they were there to help me, and they began to trust me, and that was important.
Ken, now I'm going to just jump back to UFC for one more second before we progress into your time with the WWE. You mentioned how Vince will work with people if it makes him money. Is Dana White that way in a sense? Is there a bridge that you can't, that cannot be burned with him like there is with Vince? Vince seems to always come back and work with people again. Do you see Dana White being in that light where a bridge has been too burned that he won't go back or people won't go back?
Well, I mean, it depends on who it is, I guess. I haven't seen him do that. I've seen him, you know, have problems with certain people, but been able to still keep him around. But I think when Dana White gets it in his head that person will never work for him again, even if that guy is a world champion, you know, I don't think he'll bring him back. I don't think he'll go back on that. He will say things like, girls will never fight in the UFC, not as long as he's running it, and then turn around and do it and then tell people he didn't say that. So there's a lot of things that Dana White does that I don't think he realizes he does. But there's one thing I know he doesn't do is when he says that, you know, that person will never work in the UFC, not as long as I'm here, if he's pissed off at them, whether they make money or not, whether the fans want them there or not, he won't do it. He won't bring them back. And I think that's it's a downfall for him, because it's really truly about business. And it's about making the fans happy. And I don't think he understands either one of those.
Right. And I think that's something that Vince McMahon might actually understand a little bit more. Now, back to WWF, you seem to be like the prototype for the MMA guy turned pro wrestler. I mean, you had the ankle lock first, and then guys like Kurt Angle followed suit. Then you had Brock Lesnar come in, and basically everyone, you were the prototype for that kind of athlete. Do you see yourself, like you said, with the UFC, they're not paying homage to guys of the past. Do you feel like the WWE is kind of missing the boat on paying homage to Ken Shamrock?
Yo, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. There's no question. And a lot of the fans, you know, really, they're even asking, you know, why am I not around? I mean, I was there when we had the Attitude Era, when WWE was getting smashed by the WCW.
Yeah.
In the ratings, and Vince made a really big, took a big chance on me, bringing me in, trying to change the face of pro wrestling. He wanted to make it more edgy and more realistic. And so when he brought me in, I was that guy that would give him that look. And when he put me in there with Bret Hart and Stone Cold, when they had that I Quit match, you know, that was phenomenal. Those two guys literally went after each other, and it was a shoot. I mean, it was unbelievable what those guys did.
Yeah.
And I was in the ring at the time, and it made it even more legitimate, me being from where I came from. And it was a tremendous turnaround for the WWE, because after that match, we started being able to compete with the WCW, which was killing them before that.
That was
so. I thought I had a big piece of that part of helping turn it around, and yet I got no recognition for that. I mean, look at all the submission holds that are in there now. before Ken Shamrock and after Ken Shamrock is a complete different world of wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before it was figure four leg lock, maybe
a full Nelson.
Maybe full Nelson. Afterwards, you had cross faces, you had ankle locks, you had all these great stuff. The stuff that CM Punk does now could all be traced back to when Ken Shamrock, and I didn't even think about that till he brought it up.
Yeah.
That is all him. Now, Ken, you, and this is harping, I guess, on what we just talked about, but you brought it up, and I'm going to continue with it. You basically were there for the start of the Attitude Era because you led to heel Bret Hart. You led to babyface Stone Cold Steve Austin. What did you know what you were doing at the time? And looking back, do you feel that you were as big a part that I just realized you were?
Yeah, I knew when I was in the ring. But, you know, the good thing was everybody played their part to make that thing really what it was. Those guys put on one hell of a match. And oh, yeah. Because I was from that world of the realism.
Right.
And the way they put that match on, which was so real. And I knew that I had turned Stone Cold and I had turned Bret Hart just by what I was doing in the ring. And those guys did their job by turning themselves. And Vince McMahon was a friggin' genius by putting that scenario together. And we were all able to pull it off. And I knew when I was in there, I knew I had just did something that, you know, I didn't realize I was capable of doing, and that was really helped changing the face of pro wrestling.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you did, and it seemed like you were being groomed for a world title run. I mean, like, I'm surprised that never happened. Is there anything that you can attribute to a reason why you were never the WWF champion?
I to this day I don't know. I thought that when I was doing the angle with The Rock and the Intercontinental title, when we were having those pay-per-views and we were working those angles, and he went on after I ended up getting the belt, but he went on to face Stone Cold and some of the other guys, and he ended up getting the belt. I thought that I would move up and go after him because of what we had done prior to that. I thought that's what the angle would be. And I would come after him for the heavyweight belt because we had great matches. And it just never flourished. It almost seemed like that I went the other direction. And to this day, I don't know why. I thought I did everything right. I thought I was, you know, in a good position to make those moves. But, you know, I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, and you also had the deal with Shawn Michaels. You did main event a pay-per-view with him. Were there ever discussions? I mean, how close were you to getting to that absolute next level? Or was it not even discussed? Or was it?
It wasn't discussed, but I sure felt like that was where we were going because I was over. I was getting over real big with The Rock and with Shawn Michaels and Stone Cold. When I was working with them, I was rubbing up with some pretty big stars. And so I really thought that I was going in the right direction to move up to that next level. I was carrying the torch pretty well, and it stopped. So I don't know. I couldn't tell you why.
Well, it's an unfortunate event, and you should have been elevated to that level. I know WWE On Demand is showing that pay-per-view that Kevin just spoke of, the In Your House Degeneration X, where you took on Shawn Michaels in the main event. Being involved in the roles with Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, when it came down to that Survivor Series where, you know, as Vince says, Bret screwed Bret, where did you stand on that? I'm sure you've been asked this question 100 times, but at the time, being fairly new to the wrestling business, seeing something like that happen with your boss, I mean, what were your feelings towards the way he acted toward Bret Hart and what Bret Hart did in return?
Well, I really don't know everything that went on, but I know that Vince had his position, and I know Bret had his position, but like I said, I don't know everything that went on. I thought that, you know, when Vince came in the locker room, there was about two or three of us in there, You know, as we were walking out, I saw Brett, you know, nail Vince. So, Vince, I don't know what it was, but I think that Vince had it in his mind that he had to go in there and confront Brett, let Brett get off his chest whatever he needed to. And if it was going to be a physical thing, then so be it. And I think that that's what they did. And that's one thing that I respect about Brett and I respect about Vince, was that they didn't go crying to anybody. They didn't go, you know, talking to people, telling people how somebody did this. You know, they went behind closed doors and they did what they did. And, you know, that's a lot more than I could say for some people who run some organization. They do a lot of talking, but they don't ever get confronted with the people they're doing the talking about.
Right, and Ken, moving forward in your time with WWE, you came in. Later on, we saw Steve Blackman come in. We saw Dan Severn come in. What was the take on that time where guys who have legitimate fighting backgrounds coming in into the pro wrestling world? You were the first, to my knowledge. And then Dan Severn and Steve Blackman coming in, was that something that you can take credit for?
No, I think you give credit to Vince. I think Vince had this thing in his head that he had to change wrestling because, you know, the only way that he was going to be able to top the WCW was to push the envelope because they did take a lot of the big stars over to them. So Vince, and like I said, I think Vince is a genius in a lot of different ways, but he saw an opportunity to take what he had and go get some other people, looking at the foundation of what the world was looking at, which was MMA, the war, different things that were going on, and try to figure out how we could make the rest of the world watch pro wrestling. And so he basically started to get more of the guys that were legitimate badasses and putting them with his guys that were legitimate, real legitimate good workers that could project that badass attitude.
To me, why, and this is just opinion-based question, why didn't Dan Severn translate the way that you did in pro wrestling?
Character. You know, if there's that it factor. I think you have to have it in fighting. You have to have it in pro wrestling. You have to have it in movies, sports. Any guys that you usually get to that level, he could be good, but it's the guys that the fans start to love and fall in love with, whether they're good guys or bad guys. There's an it factor where they can connect to you. You know, you have this thing where you look into a camera and you can talk to people, or the way that you move in the ring and your emotions in the ring and your testament in the ring. People can feel that. And I was really emotional. I was really intense. And people really, really was drawn to that. Whereas Dan Severn was more of wiping his armpits with his shirt, coming in, not really having the physique that he needed, and not being able to back up what it is he was. He was really flat.
Yeah.
And even in his work, it was almost like he wasn't over-exaggerating stuff. I mean, he was just flat. And it was a shame, too, because Dan was a good guy, you know, but it didn't, his personality didn't really jump out in pro wrestling. He didn't have that it factor.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I mean, you did have the it factor. You had the charisma. When you would snap, it was almost scary and terrifying to see on television. Ken Shamrock snapping would scare the shit out of me. When you left WWF and transitioned back into the world of MMA, how were you received in the world of MMA after spending so much time in pro wrestling? Was there animosity? Did people look at you differently?
Well, it was kind of split down the middle. I know even some of my guys that were on the lines and team couldn't understand why I was going there, and so there was, and I didn't pay much attention to it because I knew what I had to do. And I knew what it could do. I mean, I had a vision of trying to bring the MMA fans into pro wrestling and the pro wrestling fans into MMA, because they really are pretty similar if you look at it. Other than, you know, you got one that's entertaining but still very athletic, then you got one that is very intense but doesn't have the entertainment that it needed. So I tried to mix that together, and I think pro wrestling was good because you could put in the legitimacy of the realism, and that bringing pro wrestling into MMA, you could bring the entertainment part into MMA. And I think both of them could give each other that it factor where you could really blow it up to that next level. And I think I did that. I think I did it with the WWF when I came in and ref the match. I gave them that it factor, that realness. And then when I came back into pro wrestling, I was able to give them the promo, and I was able to give them the character, and a lot of the things the other guys could follow in on, promoting a fight, you know, with Tito, learning how to get edgy and get people to buy into why they want to watch this fight. So I was able to really think about those things and really build each organization, take the strength from each of them, and try, like, for instance, going into pro wrestling, I brought in that it factor, that this is the real badass right here, and this is, we're coming in to kick some ass. And then when I went into MMA, I brought in that entertainment factor, whereas it's not just about two guys going in and beating each other up. It's about why they're going in to beat each other up. So I was able to do that pretty well, and it worked out well for me. And I think a lot of people followed suit after I did that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, after your time in UFC and MMA and everything like that, physically right now, if you wanted to, do you think you have it in you for one more run in professional wrestling?
Oh, absolutely. And no question in my mind. I'm in phenomenal shape. I mean, I'm ripped. I'm big. You know, it would be a dream to be able to go back and be able to get a run at that title. The one that I believe I deserved, you know. I mean, I came in there and I thought I did everything I needed to do. And I didn't get it, you know. But I'm not going to whine about it, but it would really be nice. And I know the fans want it. That's why I don't understand, like, what Dana White can do and what whoever is calling the shots in the WWE now won't put aside their personal differences for business.
Right. Right.
Do you think Dana White is just... I don't want to use foul language, but do you think he's just a bully? Do you think he's just of the opinion where it's like...
How is that foul language?
No, I stopped myself from saying other words that I wanted to call him. Okay. You know? Asshole comes to mind, shithead.
Well, let me tell you this. The world right now has a problem with people bullying people, and it's an issue with kids. And we put guys like Dana White on TV going around calling people douchebags and that their effort never were, never has been, putting down people because he's sitting across from a camera and no one can touch him. And our kids, our young kids, watch this stuff with the F-bombs and the way that he treats people who have really pretty much built the UFC. And he puts them down constantly when there's something doesn't go right. And yet, we're the first ones to scream and yell about bullying and how we need to change the culture of bullying. And yet, we glorify guys like that.
Yeah, it seems like that's what's been going on a lot.
Bullying other people because they have the power.
Right, right. And it's, you know, it's unfortunate the way it's been going on like that these days.
I know that you had somewhat of a troubled childhood. I know that... you know, you were living out of a car for a while, and you were moved from home to home, and you eventually found your place, and you found your way, I guess, in the world. I hate to use cliches like that, but you know, before you started getting into athletics and you started lifting weights and becoming strong, were you did you have to deal with a lot of bullying when you were growing up, and do you think those experiences led to you becoming who you are?
Yeah, you know, when I was young, and a lot of people tell you this, I got into a lot of fights. A lot of it was because of the color of my skin. I lived all in an African neighborhood, mm-hmm. and I was going to school, and I was fighting at 5 years old because I was white, but I didn't know that. Neither did they. We just did what we saw on TV, and we did what our parents were doing. And at that time, you know, you talk about it in the 69 and 70, people were getting killed over the color of skin. It was all over TV with the Vietnam War. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, things were just going nuts. And a lot of people were getting hung and burned and shooting over color of skin and, you know, race riots. And here I am going to school, and I'm the only white kid in this school. And so we're fighting, and we have no idea why, but we are. And so I end up moving to a pretty middle-class area after living in poverty. And I end up fighting because I talked differently and I acted differently. And it was pretty much an all-white neighborhood. But I didn't fit in there either because I was different. So it was a tough time for me in learning how to defend myself all the time at a young age, that when I got old enough, I hated people that would take advantage of other people. I didn't like it when people treated a girl badly or that two guys would be pushing some kid around. You know, I wouldn't let that happen. And I to this day, don't like that. I have problems with that. I've never bullied anybody, but I've always been able to finish something that somebody started.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the thing with Dana White and the being, you know, associated with being a bully, why do you think he feels like he has the power to treat people like this? I mean, like, do you think it has something to do with maybe his upbringing as well?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, you just listening to his mother speak about how he was just a good kid and everybody got along with him. And then when I first met him, he was a good dude. I mean, really a likable person. So I don't know if that's even the case. I think that all of us have gone through it at some point where we make enough money that everybody's our friend and everything, they give everything to us for free, and all the girls come up and you pick the litter, and we start believing that we're invincible and that nobody could touch us. And so that cockiness comes out. And I think we've all kind of gone through that. Especially coming from nothing, having nothing, to all of a sudden being something. But the ones that can change themselves are the ones that listen to the people that love them.
Yeah.
Like your wife or your kids or your mother, father, or your uncles, whoever around you that say, you know, you're getting full of yourself. And if there's a few of them saying it, which was what happened to me, I took a look in the mirror and realized that, you know what, I needed to change because it's not them, it's me. And so, like I said, we do go through that. And I think anybody that comes from nothing and it comes to stardom has that time where it's time to change. And the ones that do are usually the ones that can turn around and make it and be okay. And then it's the ones that deny that it's them and it's everybody else.
All right, Kenton, yeah, that's definitely true. Shifting gears back to your time in WWF, there was a brief portion where they brought in the attempt to make MMA a part, I guess you could say, of WWF, WWE, with the Lion's Den and the Dungeon and all that stuff. What was that like for you, and how did that translate to you? And my second question, a follow-up, I guess, would be, what was it like working with Owen Hart?
Well, I tell you, the Dungeon thing they brought up, they put weapons in there, and I worked some matches with Black Men and even a little bit with Vince and then, of course, Owen. But that was definitely a tribute. I mean, I guess you couldn't say more about that being flattery when they actually build the cage for you, which means that I thought that, wow, I am going places in that. Yeah, someday I will get a shot at that title or run for it. Because, I mean, to do something like that, you know, I mean, they really got faith in it. And so it was awesome to be able to get in there and do those matches because it was difficult to do it with a cage.
Yeah.
And it being and leaned a little bit, and you couldn't bounce off of them. There's a lot of things you couldn't do. So you had to be really technical and very flamboyant and very charismatic to pull off a match in that cage, and we were able to do it. And I tell you, nothing better than when I was with Owen, because his character was just, I mean, was great to work with him, because no matter what we did, he was such a professional worker, He could work anywhere. We worked in the dungeon, even, which was a small place that his dad had. It was great. And then we worked in this cage, too, with weapons and everything. And what a match I had with him. And tremendous worker. He has no ego. Everybody loved this guy. And I was honored to be able to at least have some time with him.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is about Ken Shamrock is a lot of the things you have done are all very memorable. I mean, you can remember a lot of Ken Shamrock moments in WWF.
Very true.
You know, I mean,
very
like, true. Today everything happens so fast. It's like Crash TV. But then when you did something, it was memorable, and people remember it to this day. Which brings me to this question, but going back to why I don't understand why you were never WWF champion. Do you feel that there might have been people backstage that might have been jealous, that might have had a little bit of power, a little bit of say, that might have maybe curtailed your rise to the top?
Absolutely. That's the reason why I probably wasn't there. I know for a fact that's what happened. A lot of people were talking to me behind my back, and they were saying things that I was doing outside the ring, in clubs and behind closed doors, which I think everybody was pretty much doing. And but yet that I was being, you know, kind of targeted in a lot of ways. And so, you know, a lot of things just went the other way for me, and it wasn't fair, you know what I mean? I thought I was pulling my weight and doing things I needed to do, and, you know, I got for some reason targeted because someone was jealous, or a few people were jealous, and I ended up on the short end of the stick. So it is what it is. I always say this to the fans. They're the most powerful people in the world when it comes to entertainment or any aspect, whether it's movies, sports, whatever it is, because they have the say to say, we're not going to put up with this anymore. We're going to boycott you because we should have a say in what it is that we want. We shouldn't have this stuff shoved down our throats because you tell us it's good. We're the ones paying the money for the tickets. We're the ones putting the money out there to make you guys rich. The least we could do is get a little bit of what we want.
Yeah, that's true. It's unfortunate the way it goes that way. And my final question to you for the evening is UFC MMA, WWF. You know, people think of the wrestling business that are in the wrestling business as like it's a dirty, dirty business, backstabbing business. You don't hear that so much in MMA, backstage, political-wise. How would you compare the two? Are they on par with the backstage BS that goes on, or would you say one's a little worse than the other?
Well, the reason why you don't see about it in MMA is because, you know, there's really not a lot of places to go.
Right.
And so with people talking out like that, you're not going to see a lot of it because they want to work. And but you're going to start seeing a lot more as generations go. Like, we haven't even seen some of the after effects of guys who've retired from fighting. We're starting to see a little bit with Gary Goodrich and Kevin Rozier. You know, nobody knows about these things because nobody's putting them on TV or nobody's showing what's really going on. But you'll start seeing more of this stuff going on. You'll start seeing people speaking out more about how abused they were. Because right now it's so young. WWE's been around a long time. And so you've seen a lot of things that have happened. People were speaking out a little bit more after the fact. So that's why you're getting more of that talk about, you know, us being told this, us being told that. Well, I believe this. With everything that I am, it'll be worse than what WWE is when that time comes.
Ken, real quick, talk about your time working with then. Sum up your time with the NWA TNA.
Oh, I was, you know, unfortunately, I didn't really get to put a lot of time into that because I was still fighting. And so I only got to go up there like once a month to, you know, to wrestle, but they put the belt on me. I was the very first champion of, you know, TNA.
Of course.
And it was a great privilege. And I truly, really, really thank them for having the trust and the opportunity to do that for me. I wished I could have done more for them, but at the time I really was trying to make a comeback. And so no hard feelings towards them at all. I thought they treated me excellent. They were very professional with me when they They needed to let me go. They sat me down. They talked to me. They even explained to me that they needed me to drop the title. And they were really, really professional. Jarrett was really, really professional. And I really appreciate that about them, is that they weren't trying to stab anybody in the back. They weren't trying to do any underhanding things. They were right up front with everything, and they told you what they needed, and this is how we're doing things. And so you weren't ever like just like one day like, no, we're going to get you back in there. Just don't worry about it. Drop it. We'll give you another shot at, you know, you weren't trying to blow smoke up your ass. They basically sat down and told you the direction and where they were going. They told me why they couldn't use me anymore, and it was very professional. And so I've always had really good feelings to them.
Ken, I'd be remiss if I didn't go back. I remember catching the very first round of UFC pay-per-views when they ran the tournament system, as well as having the Super Fight Championships, which, you know, eventually worked its way into the Heavyweight Championship, and then they started bringing in more divisions. I think, though, I mean, I know there's just so many names that you've taken on, you know, in the early days. Hoist Gracie comes to mind, Oleg Taktarov, Dan Severn. But I remember watching when Hoist Gracie came out, and I think I had the same opinion of you, of him, as you did, where this guy who's tall and lanky and he's wearing a gi, you know, what could he possibly bring to the table? I remember seeing his match against you, thinking that you were just going to tear his head off, and I remember reading that, you know, he kind of surprised you the way he surprised everybody else, and you know, took a victory on you. Was that really that big of a lesson to you? And did that help you prepare, you know, as the tournaments and the pay-per-views continued?
It was a huge lesson for me. I mean, I was winning over in Tank Race. You know, I was first guy to take that, and I was rising to the top very fast. And then I was wrestling and working with guys in the States and dominating everybody. And so I was getting quite a big head. And, you know, I really thought that when I looked at this and I was in it, I was like, I was just no way I could lose. So I was like, nobody's going to beat me. And I looked at this guy who was grappling. I watched a few of his matches, and I thought, this guy is no way going to be able to handle my power. I'm going to crush this guy. A guy wearing pajamas into the ring, trying to roll around the ground with me. And I was like, I'm going to crush him. And, you know, you can't take anything away from this guy, man. It was tremendous the way he showed. He was tapping everybody out. He was rolling on the ground. He was taking big guys out, and in this methodical way. And it was tremendous, you know, to see that and to watch how it developed. It really made me change the way I thought. It leveled my head a little bit, and I was able to go back to the drawing board and understand that, you know, you have to prepare for everything. Because I didn't understand how that gi worked. And that gi was a strength. It equalized any strength that I had against him. I was able to wrap it around me, and I couldn't tear through that. I could break through his arms. I could toss him out like a rag doll if he didn't have that gi on. You know, but with that gi, boy, it sure equalized things.
Damn gi.
I tell you though, I mean, I think one of the reasons why I was so drawn into the UFC, you know, during its early days, was the fact, you know, number one, that it was really anything goes, and you know, it was styles against sizes and whatnot, and you know, there were a lot of characters. I mean, you know, you were the badass, and you were, you know, I guess flamboyant maybe for the time, where you were, you know, a little bit of showman, but all business. You had guys like Gracie, who was kind of an enigma to a lot of the audience. You had Severn, who just looked like, you know, no nonsense. He didn't have much of a personality, but then when you saw him work, he didn't need it. And it goes back to our point earlier when we first started speaking to you tonight, where, you know, things like this, whether it's UFC or Pancrase or WWF, it goes to show how history just is so important. And I think it makes your point, you know, very well, that, you know, that the history needs to be acknowledged and it needs to be remembered, so people will, you know, have an idea of where the sport came from and where it evolved to.
There's no doubt. I mean, when you understand where something comes from and then you watch to where it's at today, you get an appreciation for the evolution of it. You know, why are so people are so interested in the world and how things, you know, began and how we got from, you know, riding horses to, you know, buggies to, you know, cars you know, how that evolution worked. It's cool to see that. It connects us with something real. And I think it's the same thing with sports. It connects people, fans, to something that was bigger than us, something that was there before us, and then it's still connected to where we are today. And it gives us a history that we can be proud of. You see the evolution of the growth of it and how tremendous it is today as opposed to when I was doing it and how raw it was and how un-technical compared to what it is today, you know, with the training methods and everything. You get appreciation for that growth, and there's a connection there too. You know, there's a foundation, and it makes it strong, and I think we're missing that. I think we're not acknowledging it enough. And one, the biggest thing is that the guys that were doing it at the time, who are older now, who are broken down, you're giving them a day or however many times that thing is shown to have that moment again to be able to go, yeah, I remember that, and people patting them on the back and, dude, that was you. Giving them a moment or a time of being recognized as a guy that helped create the sport. I mean, you don't have to pay them anything. I mean, but man, give them a day of glory or give them some recognition to where they can be proud that they were a part of something great. And don't stomp them out like some ant.
Now we talk about the history, in your time in the MMA game, is in my opinion, there's one guy who I feel like he never got the proper recognition amongst the casual MMA fans, and I feel like Boss Rutten should be more of a household name when it comes to MMA. Is there somebody who sticks out in your mind who you think deserves the recognition in the world of the mixed martial arts that doesn't get that recognition?
Oleg Taktarov, Tank Abbott. Tank Abbott, if people want to know the history, Tank Abbott was the very first guy to bring in gloves, the MMA gloves. He wore them first.
Wow.
Nobody else did. He wore those first. We never hear about that.
That's the first that I'm sure a lot of us here have heard about that. And that's a big part of it, because now everyone
bring in the gloves.
Yeah.
And he became a pretty good dancer in WCW.
Yes, three count.
Hey, you know, it's funny. Yeah. You brought up his silly gimmick. I know that I was asked from a few people on Facebook, what do you like best about your time with the Union?
I would have to say the friendships that developed and watching each guy after the Union was split on the direction they went and the growth. But I truly made some good friends being able to work so close to them. I became friends with all of them. It was, you know, to me that was special, having that union and being able to be so close to so many of them and really developing a relationship with them. So I cherish those things when we worked in groups and stuff like that.
Yeah, sometimes it's the little things like that that really, you know,
that sticks out to me, because I actually liked the Union.
I remember that, like, the song was Union.
Yeah, like, it was I enjoyed it. I was younger at the time, but it was fun.
Don't date the guy. Like, don't make him feel old.
I actually enjoyed the Union. I was a fan.
And I remember that because it led to the storyline with Test and Stephanie. That was when they all got the right to ask for something, and he asked for a date with Stephanie McMahon.
And Ken Shamrock was in the Union, so there he is again.
There he is again.
In the middle of everything. They owe you, man.
They really do.
Seriously, you were there for a lot of great stuff. Listen, Ken, we're gonna wrap this up. Is there anything else you'd like to bring up or plug before we let you go tonight?
Yeah, and too, you know, a lot of people out there have been really good to me. I want to say, you know, thank you to Tito. You know, we were at this event. We had our times in the past, but man, What a great guy. I wish him the best in the future, and he heals quickly. You know, my brother Frank at the show, I know he's really getting into broadcasting. I thought he looked great, and I wish him the best. I want to thank Protect Security, Gene Toski out of Las Vegas, for their protection agency and really working their agency for us to keep us safe while we're at the shows. And last but not least, I really got to give a shout out to JT Walsh, who is tremendous in setting and helping us move forward in our business. Yeah, I just want to make sure people know how to get a hold of me. I'm always on my Twitter account, and a lot of people are trying to make sure that it's me. But I am on Shamrock Ken Twitter.
There
at
it is.
Twitter, Shamrock Ken.
All right, all right. Any appearances or anything coming up that we should know about?
I got a sports drink coming out called the Shamrock Slam.
Nice.
Yeah, and I got a radio station. I can't say what it is, but it's got 40 million viewers. And we'll be doing that January of 2014. I will be hosting.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
WWE and MMA broadcast.
Very awesome. Nice. You're stealing our audience.
Yeah, maybe.
No, dude. We're going to work together.
That's it.
Absolutely.
Huge.
If you have 2 hours a week and you have nothing better to do with those 2 hours, please feel free to hit us up.
Well, I just have so much more that I would love to ask him that I can't wait to hopefully do it again sometime.
Yeah, Ken, we'd love to have you back on again, man.
Hey, somehow or another, we can work together and we'll build it up, man, and we'll just light up the world.
I'm all for that. Ankle locks for everyone.
Yes.
Ken, thank you so much, man. You were an awesome guest tonight.
Well, I appreciate it, guys, and God bless and good luck.
Thank you, man. You too. Take care.
All right.
Hey, guys. Welcome back. We're still here with the Exer guys, and we just wrapped up with Ken, and I'm tired.
It's
I don't know
late.
About you guys.
It's because you're old.
I know. We are the Shining Wizards, shiningwizards.com, the network. You know the 9 shows. They're on the website.
Our SWN.shiningwizards.com. We have a brand new t-shirt on ProWrestlingTees.com. /Shining Wizards.
Slash.
That's two now we got up there.
We got the big logo.
I invented a word
tonight.
You
fucking stuttered, and then Ken stuttered right after you.
No, I said aminosity instead of animosity.
Orinization?
No, or night. You'll hear
animosity.
It.
No, I said aminosity.
No, Ken was trying to say, oh, and I'm doing the same thing now.
Organization.
But he did not.
Organization.
We're trying to say, it doesn't matter, I'll beat your face in.
You know what we should call the show tonight?
Aminosity, organization.
Aminosity and organization.
You guys can follow Ken on his Twitter at ShamrockKen.
Or follow him around.
Just follow him. At ShamrockKen. You can follow the Exer guys at the Exer guys. They're on Facebook, facebook.com/the Exer guys.
/.
And they have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/Exer guys bro.
I will be all over that.
Definitely anytime you use the Twitter and the Exer guys are thrown out there, definitely hashtag no fatties.
Twatter.
Because that's how they roll.
Kings of Neon. Kings of Neon studs. Yeah. And by the way, you have very nice handwriting.
Thank you. You have big muscles.
I don't give compliments.
I touched his muscle during the camera.
I don't give him
faggotry on the other side of the room. It's just astounding tonight.
I have to even this out
check
and
out.
Be like, hey, what's hanging over your belt loop?
But you have nice handwriting. Whatever. I appreciate that. I can accept that.
Hey, 50-50. Yeah,
you can check out Matt's website at meatspin.com.
Meatspin.com.
That's right.
Helicopter.
And if you want to see JP and Triple M.
M3.
Whatever.
Triple M.
You know what M3 stands
for? I am Triple M.
Just Google Images Lemon Party.
Mint Mike Mitchell.
Yes.
You'll find these guys, Mint Mike Mitchell and JP.
Harlem Shake Poop.
You can find Kevin's all his upcoming comedy dates at twogirlsonecup.com.
Bathhouse Soaps.
Sounds about right.
Hey,
right.
You want to hear a funny story quick?
Yes.
It's actually a real funny story.
All right.
Yes. Go ahead.
So absolutely. One day, in real life, because that's a land, that's real, I'm at work and I get a notification on my phone because I have a smartphone, you know, but it's a piece of shit. And it says I got a notification that someone shared my photo.
Keep
so
it up,
I look.
My nigga.
Yes.
No, keep going. It's compelling.
No, stop
it's
it,
compelling.
Tony.
It's going to be compelling because I get this notification. God damn it, Jesus. What are you doing to me?
What a douche.
That this Bathhouse Soaps shared my photo, and I was a little too revealing in the photo.
Oh, no.
We could tell my religion.
Oh my God!
Nice.
Wow!
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
damn.
So I tell him to go on. I'm pissed off. He goes on. He checks it out. It's this gay like Facebook like page.
Oh shit!
/ Shining Wizards.
You should be flatter. Hold on,
Shining Wizards.
I hate to. I know everyone wants to go home and everyone's tired, but Eddie threw up a post on the Facebook. You wanted to vent. Yes, yes. You wanted to vent about Facebook and stalker people. I know it's getting late, but
I feel like it's so late.
This needs to be.
Do you want to tease it for next week?
Yeah, let's do a call time later in the week. Yeah, we'll do a call time later in the week. We'll talk about this.
We'll save that.
We'll talk about this.
Well, guys, next week when we will have Joey Janela in studio, correct?
Joey Janela will be
bring
in
the crickets out Joey now. Janela.
Bring the crickets out. I already shut it off.
I'm also working on. I'm working on another guest, which I'll talk to you after the show. ShiningWizards.com. Support us.
And by the way,
pointing,
we played music at the beginning of the show instead of a regular theme. If you know whose entrance music that was, hit us up on the Facebook and tell us that entrance music was and blah, 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 the person's name. And we'll send you a t-shirt.
There you go. Free t-shirt.
Yeah.
Thank you to the Exer guys. Thank you to Ken Shamrock. Kevin Grifo, Sunday nights at Tierney's in Montclair. He'll be doing open mic night.
That's not an open mic night. That's a professionally run show.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Wow. That's a professionally run show.
Such an asshole.
I know. A pompous prick.
I'm Kevin. Sorry because you guys plug Kevin's shows every time he's here.
I plug Kevin when he's here. In his asshole.
Against my will.
In his hiney.
That's rape.
Support the network. Support us. Support the Exer guys. Kevin's support Ken Shamrock. ProWrestlingSyndicate.com. They have a great show coming up in 2 weeks. House of Hardcore. These two clowns on the couch are going to be there this weekend. Get out there. Support any independent wrestling. Do we have a number to take us home with, boys?
Yeah, I do. I'll put it in post. Goodbye, everybody.
See ya. Later.
Diabetes testing supplies.